You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Something's coming.
Stand by.
Hold on to your hats. Here we go.
Welcome to the Screamcast, episode 142. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is Brad Henderson.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Brad.
How's it going?
It's going well.
Cool.
Joining us, her first time as the official co-host, Stephanie Crawford. What's up? Welcome aboard.
Hey, thank you so much. This is exciting.
BJ is at a rehearsal. She will be joining for the smut-filled back room a little bit later in the episode. But joining in her stead is the infamous Rob Hunter. Rob, welcome to the Screamcast.
Thank you for having me.
Chief film critic, Film School Rejects.
I am a word person, so I look forward to sharing some such words this evening.
Very nice. And as always, podcast interrupted by a dog bark. Today we are diving into the past few months of the Vinegar Syndrome releases. So we will be... God damn it, hold on.
This is just really good. God just keep it, going.
I can edit.
Just keep going.
Let's edit. We can edit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, why do
seriously,
that
though,
now?
Guesting on this podcast is seriously the most stress-free podcast experience, because no matter what I possibly do, I could like kill a whore right now on air, and I think it would still pale beside the chaos that comes out of Sean's microphone.
Yes, yes. We're talking about the films Nurse Sherry, Red Roses of Passion, My Chauffeur, and Snapshot. As I said, we'll be covering the smut a little bit later in the episode, so stick around for that.
Smut.
First, though, let's jump into what's on your doorstep.
Okay. Who wants to go first? I volunteer Sean, since he's already like teetering on the edge.
The edge of insanity.
Yeah.
You guys don't know
Shoot,
my
Sean.
Life. You really don't know my life. I actually
You don't know my life.
I know. I actually had some time to watch some shit. The first things I wanted to talk about very quickly is a couple films from Ben Wheatley. I watched High Rise and Free Fire.
Okay.
I basically knew nothing other than what Brad had told me about Free Fire, but I was not aware that it was a one-location type film. Loved the hell out of it. It was like an hour and a half shootout. It was an hour, not like, it was an hour and a half shootout. Set in the 70s, great dialogue, fantastic action scenes. Armie Hammer is a badass, and I want to rub my face on his beard. But pretty damn good. High Rise, however, I did not enjoy.
Rob, what did you think about Free Fire? Because I was curious, were you one of the ones? Because like, it seems that whenever I saw Free Fire at South By... like, I was, like, coming out of there like, wow, whoa. And then everybody else was like, this is the worst movie I've ever seen.
It sounds like you saw Free Fire with a bunch of assholes.
Okay, I just wanted to know your opinion, because it seems like no one's, like, in between on it. They're like, it's the worst fucking thing ever, or people love it. And I was just like, I don't understand, like... I mean, High Rise, I could totally see somebody not digging that movie. I like High Rise a lot. But I could totally understand. It's just I can understand why people don't like Free Fire, but there was just so many. I just didn't get it.
Yeah, no, I don't get it either, because it's a real, I mean, it's admittedly a one note movie, but that one note is just like a good time. And so I don't know what the issue would be. I mean, I guess if you just don't like, maybe if you want more depth in your action movies, and that's fine, but I think even if you were one of those people, there's still room in this world for movies that are just, you know, just have great action, great one-liners, a stellar cast, and then they end and you move on. I mean, I think it's a super fun movie.
I think maybe coming from High Rise, people expected more. I felt like High Rise was trying a little too hard. Like, I feel like High Rise, I need to revisit. It's one of those,
I feel that a lot more people liked High Rise than they did Free Fire, and I thought it would be the complete opposite, you know? And I personally really do like High Rise quite a bit. They're two totally different movies, though. Totally. But I don't know. I just, what are you, PJ Souls? I dig both of them. I like all of Wheatley's work. I mean, I think Field in England's the only one that's kind of like, but everything else, I'm always on board. I mean, he's thoroughly entertaining. His movies are completely, you know, one from the others, very different. I dig it.
Very nice. All right. Moving on. I finally finished season one of Ash versus the Evil Dead in order so I can start, season two. If you've been sitting on this and haven't wanted to watch it, I think there's a lot of fun to be had. It's more in the Army of Darkness side as opposed to Evil Dead side of things. It's very mixed bag, the season one is, and I'm very curious how they do season two. Because season one, they ramp up the Ash is a complete ass. They ramp up the slapstick, and then the CGI gore really grinds on my nerves. But that said, it's fun to have a film, you know, in the Evil Dead kind of universe, kind of, or not a film, but a series that feels like a pseudo sequel. But I'm curious about season two. So, has anybody, Rob, have you seen season two? Can you?
I made it through. I'll out myself here as being someone who actually prefers the Fede Alvarez Evil Dead to Sam Raimi's.
Okay. That's fine. I think it's a solid remake.
And yeah, but I mean, so part of it is, I mean, I think for me, the Evil Dead movies, the Sam Raimi's ones, they kind of were a series for me. Everyone else, I'm happy that you enjoy them. For me, a series of diminishing returns. Hmm. And so I watched the first couple episodes of Ash vs. the Evil Dead, and because it did have more of that kind of slapsticky tone of Army of Darkness, I just recognized it as something that wasn't for me, so I pretty much stopped watching it.
All right.
You know, every once in a while, Rob has a movie that he dislikes that I love, and I don't understand it sometimes. But most of the time, 9 out of 10 times, Rob says things that just gives me the biggest boner and stuff like that. Because I love that people love Evil Dead. Steph, are you a fan of Evil Dead?
Yeah, big time.
Okay. See, like, I'm with Rob. Like, I've watched Evil Dead once, I've watched Evil Dead 2 once, and I've seen Army of Darkness once. And I, like, don't have the biggest draw to go back and watch them. Like, they're there, they're fine, I can't ever sell, and, like, I'm the same way. I've watched the remake 3 times,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going out there to say it's, you know, a totally better movie, but it's just, I don't know, it's just a little more
I'll
speed.
Go out there.
No, it's just a little more my speed, I think. I'm really funky with horror comedy,
mm-hmm.
And I just, like, I'm just always, yeah. I have no interest in the show.
Totally fine.
No, screencast. Like, I have no interest in screencast anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I saw that coming. No, I feel lucky. I love the original trilogy. I really liked the remake, reimagining that came out, and I'm really enjoying Ash versus the Evil Dead as well. So I feel pretty spoiled. I just, like, love the universe, I guess, is there it is, the reimagining is.
Yeah. Oh, no, I had a lot of fun with the series. I think it's kind of going in. Like, you have to go in kind of with your expectations in check. And once I kind of saw what it was doing, I was like, all right, cool. It was a fun. I mean, the episodes are 30 minutes apiece. Super easy to kind of breeze through whenever I wanted to. I would go long stretches without watching any episodes, and I would jump right back in. It was just one of those. Like, it was casual for me. It didn't keep me coming back quickly, but I had fun in little 30-minute spurts. So, anyway. Moving along, there's this next film I saw. I got the UK Blu-ray. I guess it's coming to theaters soon. It's a film called Pilgrimage, and it stars Tom Holland and John Bernthal. And Richard Armitage. And I guess Well, is it on a VOD now?
Yeah.
I think it's on VOD. I think I saw it when I was scrolling the other day.
I'm a sucker for these kind of like medieval films, and when I saw that it starred John Bernthal, I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to watch this. And I thought it was really good. It was about this group of monks. They have to transport this holy rock to Rome, and they get some, you know, some badass guys to help protect everything. John Bernthal. I'm going to pronounce his name wrong this whole time. John Bernthal. He's a badass, and he's probably the reason you would want to really watch this.
He's easily the best thing about it, too.
Yeah, yeah. He plays the mute, and he's really awesome. The movie, I think, kind of stumbles tonally, and I don't get Tom Holland. I haven't seen the new Spider-Man yet, but I don't get Tom Holland.
Oh, you'll get him once you see that new Spider-Man.
Oh, will I?
Yeah.
But anyway, it's pretty good, and I would recommend, like, this is the type of thing I would say rent it. Like, I wouldn't say run out and watch it in a theater. But if you're a fan of John Bernthal, like, for sure, he has his scenes in this movie, and it's definitely worth seeing, especially near the end. He has just an awesome action scene in it. So,
is that the dude in Sicario that attacks Emily Blunt?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's the Punisher.
I don't know. I don't watch those shows.
And he's in Walking Dead as some annoying character.
The Accountant. He's also in that.
Oh, yeah. All right. I got a couple more, and then I'll turn it over to you guys.
Cool.
I finally watched Clown. Everyone's talked about Clown, directed by John Watts. If you've been sleeping on that, give it a watch. It's on Netflix, I believe.
Did you talk about that last time?
Did I talk about Clown?
I don't know.
I can't remember. I don't write this shit down. Did I talk about Autopsy of Jane Doe last time?
No, I don't think so.
I watched that. It's awesome, and it's a tragedy that Scream Factory wasted everything and didn't put any special features or anything on this Blu-ray. Just buy it digitally. Fuck Blu-ray.
Maybe nobody wanted to do special features on it, Sean.
I guess not, but it's a damn good film. It's one of those.
Isn't it one of their IFC ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The IFC ones.
Here's the thing is I don't know the business deal between those two, but historically through IFC, IFC secretly hates movies because before Screen Factory, stuff was only released on DVD and they were bare bones and then they would bury them.
Yeah.
Thankfully, you know, Screen Factory works with them because at this point we get the things on Blu-ray now, but dude,
yeah, it's just a waste. It's a waste of physical media. I mean, it looks and sounds great, but you know, I build my collection kind of wanting to revisit things, maybe look at some, hear some commentaries, see some special features on top of to enrich my enjoyment of the film. And like, this is such a good film. I think everyone should see it, but it's just a shame. There's nothing like at all. And I think on some other releases elsewhere in the world, there was at least something. I want to say there was a commentary, but somewhere. But anyway, speaking of IFC, The Devil's Candy is on Netflix for some reason before Blu-ray. So I finally watched Devil's Candy. And
it's on Blu-ray now. What are you talking about?
It's not on Blu-ray until September.
Oh.
It's on a DVD, I think, exclusive from Walmart right now.
Jesus Christ.
Or maybe it doesn't come out wide until September, though.
I'm going to have a conniption. I'm going to have my brain's going to explode with IFC. But Devil's Candy, you can watch it now on Netflix. Really awesome heavy metal movie that you haven't checked out. We've talked about it quite a bit on the show. Starring Ethan Embry, who's really become like a fucking badass. Like, I can't believe this is the guy from like That Thing You Do. Like, every time I see him in a movie, I'm just like astounded that he's evolved into this, you know, just straight up, you know, badass actor. It's really cool.
Okay, Sean. He already agreed to appear on your other podcast. You can let it go now, okay?
I wasn't even talking about that. I did book him for the Armchair Philosopher podcast, by the way.
And he'll always be Preston Myers, man.
All right. And finally, Species looks damn good on Blu-ray. I got the collector's edition, and I have no shame. No sense diving into talking in depth about Species. Either you like it or not. And this collector's edition is a welcome addition to my shelf. That's it.
Whew. Cool. Rob.
Yes.
Go.
Do they have to be movies that will, like, literally appear on your doorstep, or could they be ones that you just happened to watch recently?
Dude, you've listened to this show.
That's my dog barking.
Have you listened to the show?
Yes. How'd that sound? At the bottom of the pile, I recently, for a project I was working on, I watched all 8 Children of the Corn movies.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So that was fun. But I also recently caught something that you guys, I'm sure, have already seen. I have not yet until recently, called The Dead Next Door, a movie from the late 80s.
Yeah.
I just watched it recently on the new Blue, and I very much enjoyed it. It's for me, anyways, it had like a really good kind of not to the same level, but it had kind of a Peter Jackson Bad Taste vibe to it, with the the homegrown performers and style and effects, a good sense of humor. I thought it just was a fun movie that kind of exceeded what I have come to expect from these super low budget, made in the 80s movies that a lot of labels are putting out now. So I was really happy with that one. Apparently more so than you guys were.
No, we loved it. We interviewed
the director. Yeah, we have episode on it.
J.R. Bookwalter is a close personal friend of the Screamcast.
Ooh, nice. I also watched Baywatch. No, nothing.
I'm curious about it.
Sorry.
I do love the cast. Alexander Daddario, of course, is always a plus, but Dwayne Johnson and what's his name, Zac Efron, I think are funny guys, but not funny, not entertaining, and it actually has, to my eyes, the worst special effects of any of Johnson's movies, which is kind of a impressive feat. As far as the new movies go, a DVD screener of Jackals arrived on my doorstep. You guys seen this one yet?
Yeah.
I kind of enjoyed it. The ending, the third act to me is a huge letdown, but up until that point, I was really on board. It's kind of a home invasion movie with some interesting angles, and there's some good beats. The characters are pretty smart for most of it until, like I said, the third act. A little bit of blood. And it's also good fun. So, and that one I think is coming out, or comes out tomorrow, I think, on VOD.
It's fun. Yeah. I agree that the first and second act are very, very strong, and then it just kind of just says,
yep.
We're going to end it for you now.
I feel like it gave up and didn't quite know how to get the situation over with, or how to get out of it, and so it just kind of ramped it up and said, okay, boom, end of movie. And which is a massive misfire. But up until that point, it's good. So as far as whether or not it's worth the VOD rental or purchase, however that works, I'm not sure. But if you like the cast, then I'd say give it a spin.
Yeah, Jonathan, what is it? Scratch, something like that?
Yeah, The Thing You Do. Also starring?
Wow. Yeah, he's
there you go.
I like him quite a bit.
Yeah, no, he's good. I think the cast in general does a good job with it. And so, like I said, it was just disappointing in that third act. But up until then, I think it was good fun.
Well, if you heard Stephanie, she did a deep cut actually saying Ethan Embry's original name when he was casted in, Dutch and stuff. So
Dutch.
Yeah, Dutch with Ed O'Neill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Classic Thanksgiving.
But those are probably the most recent ones that I've seen. I did give Ronin a rewatch recently.
Oh my god, it's so fucking good!
I continue to be a huge fan. The new Arrow Blue, yeah, you definitely do. It's gorgeous.
So
extras are great too. But I mean, to Sean's point earlier, even if this was like a bare bones, just this movie restored, I would be all about getting it because it just looks gorgeous, and I love playing it loud. So it's definitely a highly recommended one.
Yeah, it was. I watched it recently too. That was one of the ones I was going to cover. It's just, it's still perfect. It's got some really great, before all this crazy fucking carrying. I like Fast and Furious shit too, but before all the massive CGI, everything's just all natural, and it's got, like I said, it's got a great cast. It's got a cool little story. It's just a really great movie.
I also liked that it's got what's her name, Natasha McElhone. I don't know how to pronounce her last name.
Yeah. But she's really great too.
She's fantastic anyways, but what I love is that she's one of the two drivers in the big third act chase. And yeah, I think that, you know, prior to the past couple of years where, you know, women in action started getting much more higher profile roles, like whether it be like Fury Road or whatever, and the Fast and the Furious movies, you can see a lot of, you know, really well done car chase, serious car chases with women drivers. So it's that also to me is a plus.
Yeah.
And that's how you do it quickly, Sean.
Bam.
Oh,
good
job. Good job. Shit. All right, Steph, let's hear you.
Okay. I also recently saw The Devil's Candy, and I really, really enjoyed it. And I grew up seeing Ethan Embry, Ethan Randall, and all the funny roles. But I think since Incident on and Off a Mountain Road from the Masters of Horror series, he's been exploring the more intense roles in his career, and I've really enjoyed it. So I'm with you. That one's definitely...
That's where he like plays like the abusive boyfriend, but it like trains her to be like
a
badass.
Like a prepper psychopath.
Yeah, or end of the world person. Like, yeah, that movie's okay, kind of.
Can I just add one thing about Devil's Candy? In that it's probably one of the most successfully intense movies, like genre movies I've seen in a long time. That it hits those beats and is able to like maintain. It's a short movie, but it holds it and maintains that intensity for like, you know, a large chunk of the running time. That, you know, and leaves you actually giving a shit about these characters, leaves you on edge, wraps up, lands the ending. I'm a huge fan of that movie.
Yeah, it's not too many movies that you can have spend, you know, a minimum of 3 minutes with characters and absolutely just fall in love and adore them. And that's what The Devil Candies does. Like, you automatically, that relationship between, you know, the dad and daughter, just with the music, like, in the car when they're headbanging.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a little, like, crucial point. It really draws you in. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of that movie as well.
Yeah, right from the start, it's like, God damn it, I really care about these people. This is going to be painful. And I was right. So tense. Let's see. I picked up the American Genre Film Archives release of Effects, and I saw that for the first time.
Same.
And it was amazing. I was expecting it to be a lot grimier than it was, but I thought it was actually really charming. You can definitely tell a group of friends made it together. It was a lot of fun, and the behind-the-scenes documentary was amazing. They got everyone. George Romero was there. It was, I don't know, I was oddly touched by this release. I really recommend it. Anybody else
get
it?
Yeah, I agree. It's a lot of fun, yeah. I saw it recently as well for the first time. It was a new one for me. So...
Yeah, same here. And it's like, to your point, I did expect it to be grimier, but I also expected it to be gorier. From Tom Savini's being a part of it, just from hearing about it in kind of like little, you know, offhand mentions in like interviews and magazines over the years, it kind of built up into my head as this, this big effects masterpiece. And so, not masterpiece, but big effects, you know, extravaganza. And so watching it, I actually really liked it quite a bit. And it definitely was a film that was ahead of its time. And then, you know, forgotten. So I'm definitely happy to see it, you know, back in front of eyeballs now.
This is the same company that released Zodiac Killer, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very nice. Have you talked about Zodiac Killer at all, Brad?
No, but I'm going to.
Oh, damn.
Spoiler alert.
All right. I'm gonna hand it over to Brad then. I want to hear about
it. Shit, that was too quick. I wasn't
That's
ready.
That's how you do it quickly.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. Zodiac Killer is great. That's how you do it quickly. I'm done. All right. So I'll talk about some cool things here. I mean, Zodiac Killer's fine. It's fun. It's weird. I think it's definitely one of those things that's kind of a party movie, invite some people over and watch it. It's crazy. I don't know if I can really compare it to anything. Were you at the screening during Fantastic Fest, Rob?
I was not. So my first watch of it was on this Blu-ray.
Yeah, did you feel the same way? Like, because it played really well with the crowd.
I can see it playing well with the crowd, and to what you just said, I think it'd be actually be a great like kind of murder mystery movie where you can have, you know, in advance picked one of your guests to actually be the Zodiac killer over the course of the movie. I don't know what you would do. Some kind of, you know, party.
And I figure it out. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's definitely that kind of movie. Like, I don't, as a standalone, just sitting here in my living room watching it, it's not a great movie. It's one that to me is made more engaging by its backstory as opposed to fully what I'm seeing on screen.
Yeah. I didn't get to the other film that's on the Blu-ray, but yeah, I dig the movie. The other thing I watched, I was super pumped about this. It's called The Klansman. It's from 1974. It has Lee Marvin and O.J. Simpson. It's basically this town. And I thought this was going to be like one of these movies where it's like, oh, shit, this needs to be, you know, watched by everybody right now because what, you know, this world's, you know, going through. So it's just a small town that is, you know, has a Ku Klux Klan. You know, they are beating black people in the streets and getting away with, you know, everything. Lee Marvin plays the sheriff of the town who's, you know, just one of those people that, you know, doesn't really agree or disagrees with anything. He just tries to make peace and be friends with both sides, which obviously doesn't work because we have a terrible side in this county. But, you know, it's like 80% of the county.
I heard that both sides are terrible, though.
So he tries to keep peace between everything. There's an older gentleman that lives on the mountain who in the county who kind of oversees and helps a lot of these, ex-slaves or just people in poverty. He has a big farm and, you know, he doesn't keep them as slaves. He keeps them as regular human beings. You know, he kind of oversees that and helps out. And of course the Klan hates that. So a lot of racial tension goes on through the film. And then it has kind of an explosive ending that's decent. But it's just like, it never, like, it seems like it's going to have teeth, but it never, like, bites down. It's just like, okay, here we go, and then we're just going to, like, let up. But we're not going to go that far. And that's kind of what this movie needed. It needed to be more – I think it needed to be more exploitive and heavy rather than being so – but I was researching. Apparently it was made for TV, which then it seems like it goes too far for TV. So I think that's probably why it got a little notoriety, because people were watching it on television saying, holy shit, like, this is really fucking heavy. But yeah, it's decent. I think people would like it. Next up, man, this movie fucking blew me away. Night Game. Dude, this movie like came out on Blu-ray from Olive. And like it had like the hook and the baseball, and I was like, okay, that looks cool. And it, like, I read about it, and it's like a thriller.
Is it the Roy Scheider one?
Oh, that
yeah.
Like,
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's really fucking good. It's a pseudo slasher, but also kind of has that thriller and crime drama aspect to it. So Roy Scheider plays the police detective who is trying to catch this serial killer that's on the beach who is slashing women with his hook. You know, I don't read the synopsis. Don't, like, read about it, because the whole ball game, baseball thing is not really thrown in your face right away. It's kind of like what it builds up to. So, like, don't read about what the baseball element is. It's just a really, like, fun slasher. That's what it felt like. It has so many slasher elements. It's got some great lighting. The only downfall is Karen Young is one of the worst actresses in this movie. She's not bad in everything she's in, but she has the worst accent in this movie, and just like she tries to play like a hillbilly, and it's just coming across as just like just she's just trying way too hard. But other than that, she's not in the film that much. You know, she's just one of those characters in the background. But Roy Schneider is just so good at like building up and like bursting. Like he has, you know, just that character like in Jaws, where he wants to do so much and have everything in control, but he's just stopped from, you know, everybody's just in his way. But yeah, Night Game's really good. It's got a, you know, pretty good soundtrack. It's really well edited. I mean, everything about the film I really enjoyed quite a bit.
I like that one too, and I've always kind of liked it as a pseudo double feature with that Kurt Russell movie, The Mean Season. To me, it's got a similar kind of vibe to it.
Yeah,
with you know with the a really likable lead character, a side love story that's not as important as the screen time might suggest, and just a good back and forth between. Again, our lead and this person who is the killer. And they both have that same kind of, to me, that same kind of atmosphere. They're both set kind of in, I think Mean Season's Florida, but I don't remember where's Night Game? It's somewhere down there, isn't it?
Yeah. It's on the beach. I mean,
yeah. So it's always, to me, it's always had that same kind of vibe, and they're both like mid or late 80s as well.
Yeah, this one's 89, so it's still got that 80s vibe, but also has that steamy drama thriller mm-hmm. thing from the 90s, which I really, really like, I didn't think it would be this early, you know, because, I mean, that wasn't until, like, 90, like, maybe 92, those steamy, I guess Two Moon Junction was 89, but yeah, kind of that steamy, sexy feel, and that's what this movie has as well, which I really liked. Shit, man, I've watched so many fucking movies. What do I pick? So I pick something rare. I watched this movie called Rider of the Skull. It's from Mexico. It's from the 50s. It never got released over in America, so I'm going to talk about it for some weird reason. It's really great. It's I want to know the backstory on it because it seems like it might have been a TV show and then spliced into kind of an anthology film. But it's this guy who's kind of like this Zorro character who has a 12-year-old boy and a drunk. Like an old man drunk as a sidekicks, and he wears like this little bandana over his face, and he hunts in the film. He hunts the Headless Horseman, then he hunts Dracula, and he hunts Wolfman. And like he's just going after these monsters. So it's set up like in three different areas, and you know. You know, he's not tracking all three at one time. It's separate stories, which leads me to believe this possibly could have been, you know, like a serial or a, you know, something as far as just, you know, just a, you know, a pilot for a TV show they were trying to go for. But and I think that's maybe one of the reasons why it suffered a release. But it's a lot of fun. It's really fucking funny. It feels that. David the Rock Nelson was part of it. Like everything between the Wolfman and Dracula, like I really felt David the Rock Nelson was behind those masks, which made it even more fun for me. Just because David the Rock Nelson, even though he's absolutely off his rocker, he makes the silliest monster movies. We talked about Ronin. Huh? Okay. That might be it. There's way too much to talk about. I'm done.
Right on. I forgot one.
Oh.
I wanted to mention this real quick. I don't know if Rob, if you've seen it, if you guys have seen it, but Adam Wingard's take on Death Note is on Netflix, and I gave that a watch. I'm a huge fan of Death Note. I enjoy seeing like his take on like an Americanized version of it. I think if you're a Death Note fan, you're always going to love the original series, the animated series. And if you want to dive into Death Note, like that's would be my preferred way to dive into that series. But I think like he did what he could as far as like an Americanized remake goes. I think it works as a better remake of a Japanese anime than like Ghost in the Shell does. It doesn't have kind of the cultural hangups that Ghost in the Shell does. But if you're curious about it and you want to give it a shot, I'd say it's worth your time. He has a great soundtrack in it, some good needle drops and some really fun kind of gore scenes in it. But I feel like since he's condensing such a big source material into like an hour and a half film, I think like the narrative struggles a bit, and the cat and mouse game that's kind of featured in the series, you get like a taste of that here, but it's like they almost kind of steamroll through that.
I think that's the big issue for me. I'm wholly indifferent to the Death Note world in general, but this movie, it felt like it clearly should have been like a, you know, 5 or 6 episode series or miniseries of some kind, because it's after that intro, it becomes like this super fast, just everything is jam packed together. There's huge questions left unanswered. Not even like in the mystery sense, but in the sense of like you just don't know what the hell's going on or why.
Yeah.
The only part of it that really worked for me was Lakeith Stanfield as L. Like I'd watch his character in a spinoff series in a heartbeat.
He's great. there's this extended chase, like foot chase, near the end of the film. And is it Nat Wolf or Nate Wolf?
I don't know if his running was a stylistic choice, but it's just like,
I laughed at that too. Yeah.
He's just like flailing. Like it's a wonder he's even staying upright. Like he should be falling down with every step that he takes. That's like, his character is so different than the anime. He's like this sniveling, like white privileged kid. And then his girlfriend who I don't think necessarily is in the original series, their relationship is a bit different, but I'd say if it's kind of Death Note light, like if you're curious about it, like, you know, you can't go wrong checking out. I don't think it's this horrible thing that it's being kind of just drugged through the mud by the show, by the diehard fans of Death Note. But there's enough there to like. It's a Netflix show. If you don't like it, you can turn it off. A Netflix movie. But if you don't like it, you can turn it off. But I think there's enough there to dig. And then Willem Dafoe voicing Ryuk is pretty cool. But yeah, I wish I could like give it a total like enthusiastic, like this is a great adaptation. It's good. It definitely does not go in a great territory. Like I think it's better than the Japanese live action films. I only saw the first one, so I was entertained by this more. But like I said, if you want to watch Death Note, you want to see the best presentation of that story, definitely watch the anime series. It's head and shoulders above this. But I mean, you know, you got to hand it to Adam Wingard, like, you know, like give him a pat on the back, right? Like, good job. I think he did what he set out to do. I think it was kind of a hard thing to really tackle. I think anybody would have issues and have to make, you know, hard creative choices to adapt this. And I think that he did the best he could with the material.
Cool. Do we all get another turn now?
Yeah, if you want to go for it, why not?
Just you.
Oh, all right.
Oh man. Yeah, I want to go again.
Does anyone have
so I saw else? This movie. I saw this movie called Burglar from Hell.
That's not a real movie.
No, it is. It's a shot on video movie from the 90s. It's really great, but I'm not going to talk about it.
Right. All right.
Oh, okay.
Seriously, did you have another film you want to talk about? Because, you know, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Fine. She's just already fitting in.
I know, right? It's all good. Look, I got tough skin. I can handle it. Until the mic gets turned off, computer's turned off, and I'm in bed by myself just crying, and my wife is like, what's wrong? And I'm like, you wouldn't understand.
Your wife
really
doesn't
mean
care.
To me again. Oh my gosh.
She doesn't. She would basically tell me to go downstairs because I'm keeping her up.
You should actually turn that to another segment for the podcast. Just like a hidden microphone.
Yeah. All right. We will take a break and jump into news with Josh Obershaw. We'll be back talking some Vinegar Syndrome right after this. And we take a break from the madness that is today's episode to talk to Josh Obershaw, who has the new release news, or I guess announcements news. I need to title this segment other than just news, don't I, Josh? Welcome.
No, it's all good. I don't mind calling it the news because, you know, it isn't just, you know, Blu-ray releases that I talk about. I mean, once in a while, it'll be something different. I mean, I got a couple of little things that are not related to physical media, but.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it's all good.
I'll stop overthinking it then.
No.
Seems to be my problem.
It's all good.
All right, man. What you got for us?
Okay. Well, those little non-Blu-ray bits that I wanted to share with you, not that it really matters if you don't live in Los Angeles or don't have $250 to spare, but the original Misfits are reuniting for one show in Los Angeles. They're going to be playing the LA Forum on December 30th. So that's cool, I guess.
Wow.
I mean, from what I heard, I thought the whole Riot Fest thing was going to be a one-time deal, but I assume not. I assumed wrong. I mean,
money to be made.
I guess they're just testing the waters right now to make sure that, you know, Jerry and Danzig don't fucking kill each other or anything on stage, or we get to see a real life horror show on stage. Meanwhile, Gigi Allen's in his grave going, fuck. Son of a bitch, you stole my act. Oh, the other thing, John Carpenter's going out on tour. He's doing a short tour in the fall to promote his new album, Anthology, Movie Themes 1974 to 1998. I'm glad I corrected myself because I have 1988 right here in my notes, and that is wrong. So, yeah, if you look him up, then you might be able to catch him. I know he's playing here in Los Angeles. I mean, I'm not currently in Los Angeles right now. That's just wishful thinking on my part, folks. Don't mind me.
Will it into being, Josh? Will it into being?
I shall will it. Well, he is actually playing in my old stomping grounds of Santa Cruz, California. He's playing this place called The Catalyst, which is a really cool venue. It's a really big open, well, not open, I mean, it's indoors, but it's just a gigantic space inside. I mean, it looks pretty huge, you know, for a club. And it's got a high stage, too. I mean, I've seen shows there. I saw the Melvins there. That was the loudest concert that I ever been to in my life, and it was beautiful. I saw Frank Black and the Catholics there. I mean, it's just great. Anyways, I'm getting off on a tangent here. That's all the music stuff that I have.
Yeah, if you have a chance to catch John Carpenter on tour, I just hear nothing but good things. I need to try to make it out and see him. And this is crazy that he's started doing this, you know, in this part of his career. Like, I think he meant this to just be some sort of hobby, and it's turned into this whole other thing. It's really cool to see.
And from what I hear too, it's pretty much like rejuvenated him as well.
Yeah.
He seems to be really, really enjoying being on stage and performing music. Yeah. So it's good. It's good to see John Carpenter happy.
Of course.
Okay, now let's get on to the Blu-ray news, and we're gonna start off with Arrow, because they just announced their November slate, and it's kind of meh, I guess. They're releasing
the rumblings were pretty low key.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they're going to be releasing a standard edition of their 4K restoration of The Thing. But of the new titles, we've got a film called The Villainous, which is going to be a UK-only release on October 30th. For the UK and US, we've got Pulp, starring Michael Caine. It's one of his older films. Kind of like the sound of this one, though. This one is going to be coming out in the UK on November 6th and the next day in the US. Also, UK only is going to be The Incredible Shrinking Man. For US and UK, it's going to be Animal Factory. That one's coming out on November 21st here in the US, and in the UK, November 20th. And let's see if I can pronounce this correctly. Saijun Suzuki, The Early Years, Volume 1. Saijun Rising, The Youth Movies. And that one is for both U.S. and U.K., November 27th and the 28th. But not necessarily in that order. So that's Arrow for November.
Very nice.
Why don't we move on right now to our buddies at Vinegar Syndrome. Their October slate, by the way, looks fucking awesome. Yeah. I've never seen any of these movies before, but I'm just like, give them all to me. I want them all. October, they've got Demon Wind, a film called Bloodbeat. They're going to be releasing also The Corpse Grinders. They're going to be releasing a double feature, Primeval and The Lurkers, and A Woman's Torment. All of these are going to be Blu-ray, I might add. They're not releasing a Picarama or a DVD-only release, which is kind of interesting.
They just wrapped up their, I guess, final pass of Demon Wind, and it sounds like Brandon especially is very excited for this one. He says this one's a lot of fun. So I'm going to take his word for it.
I saw a trailer for it. I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's like when they do these passes for these films, like they're restoring them, right? You watch these all the time, and the fact that someone who's seen this day in and day out is excited to rewatch one final pass, like, I mean, it's, at least has to mean it's a lot of fun. So whether it's I've heard a lot of people say it's a crappy movie, but I mean, it sounds like a lot of fun.
It sure does. And if you order the entire package before the release date, it's going to be, let's see, $99. That's going to be like 35% off or 40% off. I can't do the math right now in my head. I don't have it in front of me.
For the amount of Blu-rays you're getting, that's a pretty damn good deal.
It is. It totally is. So, I mean, you're getting a total of, what, 6 movies on Blu-ray for $99? You can't really beat that. So, yeah, that's Vinegar Syndrome. What else have we got? Okay, for our folks in the U.K., excuse me, and anybody who has a region-free player, Second Sight is going to be releasing the movie Extro on Blu-ray. There's no release date for that as of yet, but take note of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's another one of those alien ripoff movies I haven't seen, but I heard it gets pretty crazy, so I'm definitely down for that. And next up from Severin, we've got Lucio Fulci's The Devil's Honey. That is coming out this month, September 26th. So that's it for that. Moving right along. Yeah, there is a ton of shit. It's unbelievable. Synapse. We're going to talk about Synapse for a little bit because we got some late news coming in. The Kindred is finally coming in the Blu-ray.
Oh, my
Synapse.
God.
And Synapse are going to be the one to bring it sometime in 2018. I'm really happy for this one because this is one of those films that I remember seeing ads for in video stores and seeing the movie on the shelf, but I never picked it up. So I'm really happy to right that wrong at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been unavailable. So, I mean, there's been some rips, some VHS rips here and there. That have been circulating, but I mean, this is a practical effects film. I think this was either 89 or 90 as things are about to transition into more CG and everything. So this is all practical creature feature. So, you know, the more of those I can have in my collection, the better. So I just hear some, you know, good things about that one as far as the practical effects go.
Oh, sure. I remember Brad was talking about this one long time ago on the Screamcast, and him and just him talking about it, that got me really excited to want to see it. Also from Synapse, they're going to be releasing the standard edition of Popcorn. That one comes out on October 3rd.
It's still pretty pricey. On Amazon, it's like $35. I'm like, God, come on, everybody.
I know. I mean, just for a few extra bucks, I might as well just get the Steelbook.
I know, whenever they release a steelbook for these films, they always say we have no plans for a standard release, but they always do. And Popcorn was one of those films I was willing to take a chance on. But Suspiria, I bit the bullet on that one just because I was like, I don't want to miss this release of Suspiria. So I never spend that much on a Blu-ray, but in that sense I had to. But they probably will. Like, their track record has been, you know, the crazy expensive $49 Steelbook, and then 6 months later, you know, they'll bring out the standard case. So, which, you know, I get it. They get their market. People go ape shit for Steelbooks. They make a lot of money on them. So yeah. So Popcorn's finally coming out. I'm waiting for that to kind of the price to drop on Amazon before I commit to that as well. But right. I don't know. It's tough to be a collector these days.
Tell me about it. Well, just in case, you know, some of our listeners here have been living under the rock for maybe the last couple of days or the last week, what Sean was referring to, Synapse is finally putting out Suspiria sometime later this year. Pre-orders are already up. And yes, I also did bite the bullet too. I ended up overdrafting. But that's how
we do. The things we do.
I've been waiting for this.
I know, man.
For a long time. And I was just like, okay, screw it. You know, fine. I may have been drinking while I was doing that, but we don't have to talk about that.
You gotta be careful. That's another problem, too. I mean, I can relate. Even Travis Stevens was tweeting about this the other day. He woke up the next morning and he had a bunch of Tinto Brass films. You know, an order confirmation for a bunch of Tinto Brass Blu-rays. I've done the same thing. I have an order coming from Umbrella from Australia that I had to kind of sit and think, I ordered that. Okay. Yeah. So I get it. In modern technology, we have basically a store right at our fingertips now with these goddamn phones, and the struggle is real, folks. Please.
Dangerous.
Please learn how to budget. Please learn how to budget.
Yes. Oh, but I'm excited nonetheless. So
yeah, no, that release looks gorgeous. I mean, I don't like steelbooks because they scratch, and I got kids, and I just don't want to have to worry. You know, I want to be able to replace a case if it gets destroyed. But
right.
That one, man, that one is gonna have to go under glass somewhere. You know? But the artwork is really cool. I think some people were trashing the artwork, the new artwork for the Steelbook. I think it's really damn cool. If you want some other, like, there is another company that is selling a slipcover for the Steelbook that I think is the original artwork with some other bonus stuff. So I think it's like another $30. I mean, you know, there's options if you want, you know, all this stuff. I've never seen that before. Have you seen like specialized slipcases for steelbooks?
This is the first time I'm hearing about it.
It's getting crazy, folks. And I think Synapse like retweeted or whatever that company, so it has their blessing. But yeah, it's getting crazy. You collectors are ridiculous with these slipcovers.
Agreed.
But you know what? If it protects the steelbook, fine. But then you're just spending so much money to protect your case. I don't know. Let's move on. My brain hurts.
Okay. All right. That's enough for Synapse for right now. We're moving on to Code Red / Scorpion. Scorpion is going to be releasing The Psychic, directed by Lucio Fulci. I didn't see a release date for that one, but it should be. It'll pop up on Ronin Flicks when it does. It usually does. But from Code Red DVD, they're going to be releasing a Blu-ray of Soul Survivor.
Yeah.
Actually, it may be available right now.
It's available now, yeah. I think
exclusively on Diabolik DVD.
Yes.
So if you want to get a Blu-ray of Soul Survivor, which I'm very curious to check out, go over to DiabolikDVD.com and you can order yours there.
We've had a request to cover that on the show, so I'll be talking to Brad about that.
Excellent.
It was Ron Compenstein. I always pronounce his last name wrong. Sorry, Ron. Compenstein.
But yeah, we'll get to that.
Cool. Next up, we got a few titles from Unearth Films that are going to be coming out. They're going to be putting out Nightwish, Dark Side of the Moon, and The Unnameable, and The Unnameable 2.
Mm.
It's funny because I used to get The Unnameable and The Kindred mixed up when I was a kid, because I remember my folks, I remember them renting The Unnameable. I have no memory of that movie whatsoever, but because of that, the titles sort of got mixed up. So I always get The Kindred and The Unnameable mixed up. But those are coming from Unearth Films. Okay, I got one more thing, Sean. Bear with me.
Okay.
But it's a good one. It's a good one.
Here we go. I'm bracing myself.
Slaughter High, folks.
Yeah!
Vestron Video is releasing Slaughter High, finally, by popular demand. And the release date, get this, October 31st.
Nice. Brad's super happy about that, by the way. That's one he's been talking about for years.
It's a really goofy one, but I love it. I love it regardless. And plus, Carolyn Monroe is in it, so I'm already excited for this.
Awesome. Yeah, that was Vestron's not going anywhere soon. I know for a while people were wondering if they're going to keep going. I really don't think that they're going anywhere. I think they got the market cornered. They see, you know, there's money to be made. They're doing a really good job on these. It's like, it's funny. Do you have that like 8 movie Lionsgate, you know, DVD that was like $5?
I've been meaning to get that, but I held off on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like
you can have the hope that these would come out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, and then kind of one by one, you can basically take that set and like cross off with a Sharpie like all the ones that they're being released. So
it kind of makes me wonder what else is left. I know Brad is wondering about Class of 1999. Wasn't that one on one of those sets?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. I guess, what else is there?
They're going to – Class of 1999 is coming. Mark my words. Like, that one's going to get a release. And there will be much rejoicing when that happens.
Cool.
It's a really fun film.
All right. I'm done. I'm done talking. I'm done sounding like a, you know, hopped-up maniac.
It's all good, man. This is always exciting. We're August, September, October. I feel like those 3 months always have, I feel like, the most releases. So budget your money wisely, everybody. Don't go into debt over these movies. But, you know, there's just a lot of good stuff to choose from. So what a time to be alive.
Exactly. Can't wait to see what the Christmas season brings up. Oh, wait. By the way, one more thing I forgot to mention about Vinegar Syndrome. They teased a release that they're planning for Black Friday, and it's the 1983 movie Liquid Sky.
Oh.
Liquid Sky is finally coming to Blu-ray. We don't have any other details other than that. It's just a tease. They haven't formally announced it, but yeah, it's Liquid Sky. We'll have details for that next time, but I'm out. That's it. I'm done. I'll stop talking.
All right, Josh. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you next time.
See you guys later.
All right, we are back. Rob Hunter from Film School Rejects joins us.
Hello.
He's been with us, but he's with us today.
Hello again.
Still with us. Bless him.
And of course, Brad Henderson and Stephanie Crawford are here.
Hey, what's up?
We are talking Vinegar Syndrome today, as we do every couple months. We dive into their releases. So we get a handful of movies to go through and talk about.
I just want to thank you for inviting me on to talk about Vinegar Syndrome, totally unsolicited on my part. it was a really kind gesture. Yeah. So thank you.
just kind of happened. We thought about you.
That's not normally how it works, because we have like requests like twice, 2 to 3 times a week, and we just sometimes we just never respond, and other times we just say we're really booked. But so that's a you should feel really good right now.
I do. Thank you.
So. Yeah, well, Rob, you are one of our favorite people. So of course, we will.
I'll take it.
Yeah, you know. If you request to come on the Screamcast and we ignore you, we don't like you, I guess is what we're saying.
Whoa. No, no.
Sean is saying Jesus. That.
Yeah, Sean's saying
that. No, I'm kidding. It just worked out. Rob had specific interest in my chauffeur, and so it was on the schedule. So fuck yeah, Rob can come on. All right. First, let's save my chauffeur. Let's simmer this conversation a little bit. We'll, we'll tease. I can't do this anymore.
Calm down, everybody.
I know. Calm down.
Are you masturbating, Sean? Like, all I hear is this rattling. Are you hitting your desk?
I was grabbing the movies. I was grabbing the stack of movies.
Are you shaking, though? Like, are you sweaty?
He gets excited when he talks about people he hates. He gets to tell him.
Thus leading to the masturbation.
Yes. Yeah. It's nothing like a good hate-filled masturbation session. I can't talk. All right.
It's because you're masturbating.
There you go.
You're busy. We get it.
Yeah. Good God Almighty. I know how to derail this podcast really fast. So let's jump into the first film we'll talk about. This is 1978's Nurse Sherry.
Mm.
It's directed by Al Adamson.
Thank you.
Known for Satan's Sadists, as well as Angel's Wild Women, and others. Brad, I have a feeling you've seen quite a bit of Al Adamson's work.
I may have. I actually, I got confused because when you texted me that you were watching this and you were digging it, and I was like, yeah, I know, I got that too. I just haven't watched it yet. But then I realized that it's the other title. And that's where I originally saw it.
Oh, yeah, it's the alternate titles on this week's show are ridiculous.
What is Killer's it Curse. Killer's Curse.
Which, yeah, that makes sense.
But I didn't see the cut of Killer's Curse. I just knew it was called Killer's Curse. I don't know at what part it got called Nurse Sherry. But anyways, yeah, it's I've only seen it once back then. But yeah, I know who Al Adamson is. That's my point. He's he's fucking.
We've talked about Satan's Sadist before.
Yeah, I think so. And Psycho Gogo is another one of his films. Like, he's just in fucking Dracula versus Frankenstein. I mean, this guy is just he's just so fucking good. He just I think we talked about. You know, I mentioned on another show, I mentioned Uncle Tom's Cabin. You know, he did the 1976 one. He's just always kind of like in your face. He has this Hollywood mentality to him as well. But at the same time, he has kind of this like exploitation thing going on. It's just that his mind just is always like trying to make something bigger, but he just knows like if he has that budget, he'll work with that budget, but he'll make the best out of it. You know, he doesn't take it too far where the movies are just goofy or something like that. I mean, he has made some goofy fucking movies, but yeah, he's just a really fun director. Yeah. And he has made some fucking killer movies in the 70s. So click on his IMDb. I mean, I know that there's a few things streaming on Amazon Prime that has his, but hopefully we get more releases from his films on DVD or Blu-ray here to come in the near future, because he has some great movies.
Well, Nurse Sherry basically opens on a cult in the middle of the desert, and the cult leader dies and apparently eventually possesses our main nurse, who I guess
you can
is
say
Dave
titular
Sherry.
Nurse.
What's that?
You can say titular nurse.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Oh man, this is gonna be so good.
Good.
It's like this is like the build-up. Like everybody's waiting to hear the synopsis from Sean. Like they're listening, but like
by a cult preacher guy.
But like somebody's at work and they're having like they're listening just this in the background, and their boss comes in. They're like, "No, wait! Listen to this guy."
I feel like I'm even more off my game tonight. So, apologize.
No, you're doing fine. You're doing. If you apologize, if you didn't do this, it wouldn't be fun.
I really dug this flick. It's a pretty simple flick. It has one of the best heart attacks caught on film ever, where he just goes and it falls over, and some pretty incredible ghost effects, which I think were
When it's in the bed,
with like crayon by a 5-year-old
ghost attack.
So I'm gonna turn this over to you guys. We can go around. Stephanie, what did you think of Nurse Sherry?
I really enjoyed it. It seems like it'd be more salacious with the title, but, you know, it opens in the desert and kind of – it's I don't know. I did enjoy it, but it was – I was not expecting it to play out quite how it did. But yeah, cults are hot right now, so I think this is a really good time for Vinegar Syndrome to release this. Now you have Tarantino doing the Manson and American Horror Story Coven.
Oh,
so yeah,
Coven.
Coven.
Oh, dude, did you see the list of the Fantastic Fest shorts? Mark Bouchard has a fucking he has a short film in our at Fantastic Fest.
Oh my god!
I hope he's fucking.
I'm really
there. I'm gonna fucking die. Oh my god! Jesus! I'm gonna fucking quote American Movie the rest of the fucking show.
I'm not gonna complain about it. just put my sword on the tarp.
It's gonna get cold. It's gonna freeze.
But yeah, it's like.
Oh god, that movie fucking cracks me up.
So yeah, I'm sure it has a little bit of everything, and I mean that very literally. It just has like a little bit of toplessness, a little bit of effects, a little bit of blood. You know, it's just it's pleasant for kind of a violent possession movie.
I feel like these are possibly the worst nurses.
Or the best nurses.
They're not, well, it's depending what...
I like their sunny dispositions.
Yeah,
there you go.
So there's some good bedside manner.
Dude,
but, you know,
fucking Jill Jacobson wanted to be my nurse, I would fucking let her. Have you used, like she is fucking, she is so beautiful in this movie, even though she's covered in blood, but that just gets me a little turned on even more. But I mean, she's still, yeah, I know, right? She's still acting, and I don't know. She's got to be well into her.
There's dead air. Are we okay? Sorry, my kids were saying goodnight to me.
I think we lost Brad.
Did we lose Brad?
Yeah. I think he was working himself up a little bit. So. You had your turn. Now it's Brad's.
So. I know, right? Well, my kids are about to go to bed, so like I'll calm down. Like seriously, when they're up and around, and like I can as we're talking, I hear just total mayhem happening in the other room.
Watching a Vinegar Syndrome movie?
No, like I got three kids, so they're running around, they're yelling. My wife's they're you know causing her grief. And it's like all I hear while we're all talking movies. So, yeah. What happened to Brad? Brad, you there?
I'm here now.
Oh, what's up? What's up?
I ejaculated.
Okay.
I told you.
I'm not going to edit any of that out. So,
I'm just saying.
It's because I'm like just.
Did you look up Jill Jacobson photos?
All these kids are in bed. What's up?
look up Jill Jacobson photos. The lead actress in this movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know what she looks like.
That's all I'm saying. She's a beautiful girl. So
it's funny. I typed in Jill and then Jay, and it went immediately to Jill Jacobson. I swear I haven't looked her up.
I have. What were you talking about? Who was talking about Nurse Sherry last?
You were, and then you kind of disappeared.
But yeah, I mean, the film, it's like, it has a, like, I agree, it has a little bit of everything. It's just very standard. I didn't watch the Nurse Sherry version, so I don't know if that's, you know, a little more exciting. I watched the Killer's Curse because I know that is the one, I guess, that has extra footage.
The DVD has the so you watched the exploitation version.
Yeah. So that's what I watched. But I mean, I haven't seen Nurse Sherry in years. So I didn't really remember it all that much. I think I saw this like when I was in my early teens. That sounds weird. I watched this movie when I was like 13, probably. Thank you, Video Time, because that's where I probably rented it. But you know, it's fun. I think for any fan of exploitation, and you know, it's just like a more well made. What's this? Those shot on video nurse movies.
Is there a name for them?
Yeah, there's two of them. Oh, shit. Fucking Nick Millard made them. Oh, fuck. Come on, guys. Dude. I have three movie nerds, and you can't tell me the fucking nurse movie that Nick Millard made shot on video.
I don't watch shot on video.
Don't you have
shot on video movies?
Yeah, but you have IMDb. You're supposed to be I am fact-checking me.
Am I supposed to? Dr. Bloodbath?
No, not
Cemetery Sisters.
No. The only one I've seen is Hideo Itō's Story of White Coat, Indecent Acts. Mm. I think fits the mold of what you're after, but I wasn't aware that there was an actual category for it.
Death Nurse. Oh, Death Nurse and Death Nurse.
Death Nurse. Yes.
I thought you were like coming up with like there's like an actual like nurse exploitation.
Yeah. Like
subgenre. What is it? Big Fat Apple.
Ethel.
Oh, but yeah. It feels like a cross between kind of Death Nurse and horror on like Highway 5. I think that's the best way to describe Nurse Sherry, if you've ever watched both of those movies.
I'm with Stephanie on it, in that I think that there are, like, for me, there are brief beats of like, sexy time, bloody time, and then a lot of downtime in between the more genre oriented moments that kind of stuck with the character. And I'm not fully convinced they were plot oriented stretches of time as opposed to just, you know, time spent with these characters. So it's one of the ones that I like it, but I'd be hard pressed to call this version. Maybe I need to watch the exploitation version of it, but this version of it, I wouldn't exactly categorize as fun.
Well, you're in a hospital. Yeah. You need a lot of downtime.
of the few that we're talking about that I've seen, like, this was my least favorite out of them, although I had some fun with it. This was my least favorite out of the three that I watched.
Oh.
Okay.
What other movies are we talking about?
Before we jump to the other ones, I know that you guys are saving the smut for later, but I wanted to give a quick shout out to the other one, other movie that came out the same time as their Sherry, A Touch of Genie. I know BJ will talk about it more later, but I'm a huge fan of that one. It is, you know, porn, but it's like a Woody Allen porn movie.
It's hysterical.
Yeah, it's very, very funny. And then it shifts to porn actors playing the same characters at times, but I mean, porn actors doing their business. And even that is still funny.
They switch actors?
Yeah, it goes over to you know, like Harry Reams and others show up playing the characters you've been watching.
Because they talk about Harry Reams, like the guy who watches the porno is like, I want to be Harry Reams.
Yep.
And then like he jumps into it.
Yeah.
And then he's like jumps in the film and like Harry Reams is talking, but it's actually the other actor's voice that's, you know, that you hear.
And it continues to be funny too. I mean, the writing on it is just, I think, really smart, even when, you know, people are doing adult things.
Even the incestuous stuff.
Oh yeah, very funny.
It's like the heavy cream scene. Save that heavy cream from me. The movie is really funny, and like it's really wonky, and it just has a charm to it that you wouldn't expect. And this is when Joe Sarno started doing pornography. You know, he started off with, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, Red Roses of Passion, so this is probably a good segue into that. You know, Joe Sarno was making skin flicks like in the 50s and 60s. You know, very touchy stuff, and like, you know, definitely outside of the spectrum of what you would, you know, consider like even a skin flick. He was making pornography just without penetration. And the more films that Sarno made, he got sillier and sillier and harder until he was making full on pornography. So it's a very interesting thing to see, like, watching something like Red Roses of Passion and then watching A Touch of Genie, like how much, you know, you could tell like the silliness was there, but you know, when you gave him a little bit more freedom and let him loose in New York City, making, you know, hardcore pornography, he made some really funny movies. And something that porn misses a lot is kind of that comedic aspect. So, but we could talk about Red Roses of Passion.
Yeah, let's jump into Joe Sarno's Red Roses of Passion. So this is one that I did not watch. I did not get a screener of this one. So I'm going to turn this over to you guys to discuss.
Is this Vinegar Syndrome's second Sarno flick that they've released?
Yeah, they're doing a Sexploitation Signature series.
So well, they did All Sins of Sodom, but I think that's the only other one that they've done.
Yeah.
But this is their new Sexploitation line.
Well, Touch of Genie is theirs, too.
Yeah, yeah, true. So three total. I just talked about that.
Jesus, Brad.
But yeah, I know, I'm falling apart. But this is their new Sexploitation line, so it's really exciting what they're going to pull out of here, because, you know, a lot of people, I think, get confused with... sexploitation is that, you know, I think it's a common misconception that this hardcore pornography, and that's usually not the case. It's just really, really sexy movies. So we have Red Roses of Passion, which is one of the very first Sarno flicks that I've watched that I didn't love. For this movie, the plot is really interesting. So without shunning it, basically this this aunt and her cousin are kind of like, you know, lonely suburban housewives. A man comes, he's involved. They get inside of this kind of cult thing and worship this, what is this, Pan is the name, mm-hmm, of this like sexual, like deviant god thing. And so all the women get together and make each other orgasm like with roses, which is kind of sexy in a way. It reminded me of that scene in that Josh Hartnett movie when he can't do it and he makes her orgasm with the rose. I know that's a weird connection to put, but in 40 Days and 40 Nights, that's a weird movie to bring up. But Josh Hartnett makes that one girl orgasm with a rose. So there's your movie connection. Joe Sarno inspired 40 Days and 40 Nights effect. But like, there's just so much going for it, but it just feels so bland. You know, I don't know if it's the score that's just not there or if it's just how it's shot, but there is a comedic aspect to the movie, but they just never focus on it. Is it because we're thinking it's silly, but it's not meant to be silly, or was it meant to be silly? How did you feel?
Who's you?
Anybody.
Oh, I'll go. I'm kind of on board with that. I haven't seen nearly as many of Sarno's movies as you have. This is one that to me came across as like really well made, like confidently made as far as like on the technical aspect and on the just the look and the visuals and all that. But it felt like to me that once the plot was kind of introduced, it just kind of meandered after that. So I don't know if it's score based or what, but it early on I was getting kind of vibes of Anna Biller's Love Witch. Just the idea of these, you know, women in a time where they're traditionally more kind of restrained, but being allowed to, kind of explore themselves in different ways. And then there are characters who kind of like, you know, shoot that down and kind of like look down on that as well. So you get a little bit of commentary there, but it never quite bursts out with personality of any kind. It is sexy. There's no denying that. And it is engaging because you are kind of in this world where there's another cult, you know, which is a theme, I guess, going on here, and the different things they do. You never quite know how far it's going to go, if it's going to turn into something maybe a little darker, a little more horrific, or if it's going to stay just purely on the sexual front. So it's kind of leaves you on edge a little bit, but it's more so about your expectation as opposed to what the film is actually doing.
Yeah, and like I said, its setup is really great, mm-hmm. and you know we have all the elements there. And once it starts, it's like, man, this is, you know, really creative. It's fun. This is you got to put yourself in that time too. You know, that time period this movie was made. You know, seeing something like this is totally like kind of off the charts. No one else is doing something like this. But it just like it gets there and then it just stays like it doesn't. It's not eventful anymore.
Right.
And it like hits this one like plateaus and just like that's it. And then it ends. I wanted to really love it. I couldn't, you know. But anyways, I think for any Sarno fan, they're going to enjoy it because it is different and a lot of fun.
It is visually attractive too. It just never really pops. It just is, again, it's like you, there's attractive people, interesting, you know, set pieces and scenarios. But just what is happening around them and where the story is going is just kind of limps along.
Yeah. So I recommend it for Sarno fans. If you want to watch it, maybe watch a couple other Sarno movies, to kind of get you in that mood and for what Joe Sarno has accomplished in his life and what he's made. It's really hard. I made a comment on Twitter last night that, you know, it's equivalent to like Jess Franco. If you don't know what you're getting into, you could watch easily five bad Joe Sarno movies. I mean, this guy was making, you know, 10 movies a year. That's not an exaggeration. He literally was making like 10 movies a year, even towards like the end of his career. So you can hit a lot of awful Joe Sarno movies. So maybe, you know, give something like To Ingrid, My Love, or All of the Sins of Sodom, if you can get that from Vinegar Syndrome. there's two Ingrid, and I believe there's a movie called Inga as well. And pretty much everything in the 60s is pretty safe. There's a company that's releasing his movie Vibrations that's coming out on Blu-ray that's paired with All Sins of Sodom. So if you didn't pick up the Vinegar Syndrome release, you can get it from this other company that's releasing it. It's going to be a double feature. So I really suggest that because both of those films are really good. So I think it's a good way to start your Sarno. And then if you want to see kind of Sarno doing his own thing well into like the set, you know, or late 70s, what he was doing around that time, I think a Touch of Genie would be a good film. So I think he made that in the early 70s. So, but anyways, that's all I got.
Agreed.
Anybody else see Red Roses of Passion?
No, sadly not. Great trailer, though. It's actually disappointing to hear that it let you both down because wow, it's like a corker of a trailer.
The trailer kind of catches the bits, the idea of what you, where your head thinks the movie is going, by, you know, giving these little shots and giving you, like, I mean, again, what you see in the trailer is impressive. I mean, you get a sense of both beauty and sexy and a little bit of unnerving, you know, aspect going on. But it's just, yeah, the movie as a whole just doesn't do much with that. So,
you know, maybe as a female, there's something a little bit more to it. I don't know, because it is like an all-female cast. There's only like, what, one dude in it?
There's a few guys that come to the door to deliver
the
flowers.
That's right, yeah. There's that. But maybe there's something that we didn't catch. I don't know. I would definitely recommend it for people that like this type of thing. But and tell me what you think, because it is an odd movie, of course. Mm-hmm. So since Sean's sleeping, next. Are you mad? Are you looking at some photos?
No. I actually had to go put the kids to bed, and I talked to my wife because my son texted his friend. It was an asshole to his friend because his friend made him mad. So I'd have all that conversation. Well, you guys try movies. This is my life, everybody. This is my life.
Hmm.
So I was dealing with that. I was dealing with all that.
This
is my favorite totally podcast.
Cool. Mine too. It's like, all right, go ahead. Here we go. You can talk.
So, here we go. Next up. Good Lord. This is why I try to wait till everyone's in bed to do our show. And I was telling BJ, because BJ guessed it on my other podcast, by the way, the Armchair Philosopher podcast. And we had interruptions there too. My life is just complete interruptions all the time. It's okay. It's all right. I may, you know, I always say I may need therapy. One of these days I'll go.
This is getting
this
dark.
Is your therapy, Sean.
Yeah.
Let it out.
Yeah.
This is. All right. Anyway, moving right along.
So we talked about that. What else? What else we got?
Next up, we have an exploitation, kind of sort of exploitation. It's a film called Snapshot, also titled The Day After Halloween, which makes no sense. Mm-mm. So we're calling it Snapshot.
It makes sense if you're trying to make money off of it. But that's
about
it. Yeah. Yeah. I really, really dug this flick. It's more of a kind of like a psychological thriller, in a sense, about a young model. She goes on like a photo shoot. She doesn't necessarily want her face used in the photo, in the ad. She's topless, of course. Her face gets used, of course, in the ad, and there's possibly somebody stalking her, and shit goes down. See, I'm horrible at this.
I thought that was very good.
But I really dug the film. It was a slower burn than I thought it would be, but I really dug that about it. I think if you're going to do there's only like a few main characters. If you're going to do kind of this type of film, slow burn style, like this is the way to do it. Because you really do get invested with each of the characters and what they're going through. You do care for them. And then so it never goes into full like slasher type movie or necessarily even exploitation film. Like there's just some really great scenes, some really great interactions. There's a scene with her kind of, I don't know if it's like her like longtime friend, but it's an older woman that's her friend, kind of her mentor of them. Like they go out and they have drinks and they're in front of like a fireplace or whatever. And there's this, there's a misunderstanding with the two, but like that could have easily gone the exploitation route, but I thought it was handled like really well. Like I really dug the film. I was wondering what all of you thought.
I love it. the movie, I like the movie quite a bit. I was saying I love your intros, but the movie I think is good. It's I was kind of curious to watch it because the director Simon Windsor is the film behind my father's favorite film of all time, Quigley Down Under. So that's one that I've seen many, many times, but I didn't really recall seeing much else that he had made.
Oh, he made some fucking huge. Well, they were
Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles.
He made a bunch of movies that were
big. He made fucking Free Willy.
Right, but they're not movies. But the thing I when I was looking through his filmography, I realized is they're not movies where you think, oh, this is a Simon Winsor film. You know, you don't have his personality attached to it. It's just movies
he's
that you're like, yeah, I see that.
Commercial director, you know?
Yep,
you know?
Free Willy, The commercial Phantom, director.
They just got his hands on some big movies.
Yeah, and, you know, so I was curious where he kind of came from, and it's a good movie. It's an interesting movie. It's not at all what I expected. Again, to the point about the Day After Halloween title, you kind of go in expecting a certain thing, and you don't get that. But what it is instead is definitely a slow burn psychological thriller that I think also offers, especially for the time, kind of an interesting commentary on just on women's sexuality. I mean, it's kind of a good pairing, actually, with Red Roses of Passion for that sense, because you get characters who are critiquing this woman's decision to do this spread, number one. But number two, you also get characters who think that, well, since she's done that, she's, you know, gone topless for a marketing campaign, then of course that means she's open to basically whoring herself out. And so I think it's some interesting observations that it makes in there. And then on top of that, the fact that you have this kind of shifting idea as far as who it is that's kind of subtly harassing her. I mean, you don't get, like, there's nobody, you know, getting killed left and right. Nobody's stalking somebody necessarily, but they kind of are there on the fringe, you know, whether they're, you know, harassing her in little ways or leaving like a pig's head in her bed or whatever. Right. So you get that sense of just the menace of the male gaze of kind of sexualizing her, but then also, you know, wanting to punish her for it. And I think that works really well in the film, especially with where the movie ends up and where it ends once the big reveal hits.
Yeah. It was also titled One More Minute. So I think Snapshot was the original Australian title, I believe.
Yeah. It was One More Minute in America. Yeah. I believe it was One More Minute on VHS over here. And then it got retitled, I think, around the time, you know, they gave it another boost. You know, VHS companies did this a lot. Mm-hmm. It wasn't usually the same VHS company. It was somebody else that, or I just say label, I guess I should say, some other label picked it up and, you know, they re-release One More Minute on VHS. They're not going to get it into stores. If they retitle it with something that's popular around that time, then maybe they can, you know, move some units, very much what Asylum does in their sneaky way.
I love that per IMDb, it was alternately known as The Day Before Halloween and also The Night After Halloween. That's like, just, as long as Halloween's in there, they didn't really care about the rest of the words.
Yeah.
Half you know, candy, you know, either way.
The one thing I want to know is where that title came from. Is it because of the beginning of the film? Like, I was thinking about it, watching it again. I was like, did they think that the burnt corpse was Michael Myers in the hallway in Halloween 2? And, like, that's where this movie's going, perhaps?
Oh, my God.
That's immediately what I thought. And I was like, man, that would be so stupid and cheesy. Like, someone watches the first and, like, I like it. Let's title it the next Halloween movie because it could pick up after that. Like, and it doesn't. Like, it doesn't even go anywhere near that. It's just such a weird title.
Especially since it kind of rewinds and jumps back in time to then bring you up to that point.
Right. You know, and it doesn't go anywhere near that. So, but as far as the movie goes, it's a great slow burn. It's a good build up. It's got some interesting characters. It's fun. It's, you know, I like thrillers like this. It reminds me of being a kid and growing up and my mom renting those types of movies from Blockbuster. I don't know the first time I saw this. I know I had it on VHS as One More Minute. It really felt like I was watching it for the first time this time. But yeah, I think it's a great flick. It's suspenseful. It's got a lot of great scenes. It's got some tension. I think the pig in the bed sequence is pretty scary for that time. I thought that was really great. The lead's great. The photographer guy is great. I love that sequence when he comes in and he's got like the magazine like tucked in his pants and he's like kind of like thrusting it so people can like look at it. You know, and the whole thing when they're having the conversation, he's taking the pictures of the dead rat. He put like nail polish on to make it look like blood. And it's like little, even this is monologue of saying, you know, the reason why he takes pictures of dead things is that no one else is doing it.
The nail polish is a good touch too, because it's meant to like be blood, but it's also a feminine product that adds like an odd femininity to this dead animal. In my eyes anyways, maybe I'm just reading too much into it, as far as the idea of objectifying women to the point of, you know, even dead things, you know, have value, in this perverted way.
Yeah. I mean, we are talking about the guy that directed Free Willy. So I think you're on the right track. So man, I want a fucking Willy to slam on those rocks so bad when he jumped over Last Action Hero. Wow. What's that kid's name with the Last Action Hero kid?
I don't know.
Austin O'Brien?
Austin, sure. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
I think that's it.
Daniel Harris is in that movie too, yeah.
So this was Simon Winsor's first film, first feature-length film, I believe.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Steph, what's your take on Snapshot?
I, like you guys, I loved it. I was kind of thinking, oh, maybe it'd be a slasher. There's certainly that element, but the fact that I know she has a narcissistic, emotionally abusive mother, and she doesn't get along with her sister because her sister's taking after the mother. I know about her roommates. I know about her stress with money, and it's a slow burn because you're getting to really know the characters. You really care about her. And I did connect with her some. You know, I used to work in a salon. I kind of felt out to sea and, you know, worked for a bad manager and, you know, met some sweet people and some manipulative people. And it is, it's a great look how it just shows that anyone can get kind of pulled into being manipulated or taken advantage of or exploited. But the character Angela, she kept her strength through it. Super realistic, very down-to-earth character. This one really got to me. I loved it. And Brian May did the music, and the movie sounds amazing. I really enjoyed the score.
Oh, yeah. Refresh my memory of that name sounds super familiar.
From Brian Queen?
Yeah.
He's the guitarist from Queen. He's the guitarist from Queen, and he's scored like hundreds of movies.
No, the score for this is pretty phenomenal.
I'm like completely dry. I know that name so well, but I can't.
He did Mad Max, but
he's the guitarist from Queen.
Well, I get that. I'll have to look up, because I know that there's probably some other stuff I'm thinking about. But yeah, I agree with everything. Sean? Any last words?
No, not really. The score was surprising to me. Like, I was surprised like how good it was, and then of course once you find out, you know, it's Brian May. It's a no brainer. But I mean, if you look at his other scores, like he scored Road Games, Turkey Shoot. Brad, he scored.
Oh, okay. That's what it is. All right. I know that name, so basically just he's a scored bunch a lot of really, you know, Aussie flicks. So.
Yeah, he's scored a lot of flicks totally, you know, down our alley for sure. So, yeah, it's just a solid flick. I think I was surprised by it, and it's just always nice to be surprised by films. I knew absolutely nothing about this film, like zero. And I loved it. That's all I got for final words.
You want to do a joke about Queen?
No, never mind.
Oh, no. Now everybody's in suspense.
Nobody's in suspense, man. I don't know why you're speaking for everybody.
All right.
Turkey Shoot, that's how I know him. Boom.
There you go. All right, let's jump in to...
My Chauffeur.
Oh shit! This is Rob's. This is Rob's fucking jam, man. Right here.
Oh man! So Rob, so when we, why were you so? Why did you have such a hard on for coming on our show for My Chauffeur?
Well, you know how we all have embarrassing masturbation stories.
Yes.
Mm. Yes. My Chauffeur kind of played into one of mine, and so it's held a warm spot in my heart for years. I just think the movie is, and watching it now, you can watch the movie, and there's like, you know, multiple issues and faults and problems with this movie that I can point to. But the constant of Deborah Foreman through this movie, yes, is my favorite. I mean, she's been in some great genre movies, some totally fun genre movies, but this is my favorite horror movie because she, one, is in the majority of it, if not all of it, and two, is just a bundle of just utter joy that I can watch and think about late into the night or early in the morning. And it's very funny. I think it's very sweet. I think, you know, it's kind of a fun movie. It's a movie that kind of sells itself as like a, you know, an 80s, you know, sex comedy, and then doesn't really deliver on that. Instead, it just is kind of like a perky underdog story. It gets lost in itself, but I don't care because, again, you know, Deborah Foreman is just smiling, and I don't know. Maybe it's just the way she speaks to me in this movie. I don't. It's a very personal thing. But I think that it's a movie that doesn't get talked about enough, and so I was like super excited when Vinegar Syndrome put this out in this new edition. The interview with her on there is great as well. It's you know, a new interview, but her reflections on the film and just on her career in general are great. I think it's a movie that everybody has those movies that you can put on and it just brightens your day. It kind of puts a smile on your face. This is that movie for me.
Yeah. Well, I first saw Deborah Foreman in Valley Girl, so that's a favorite of mine. Stephanie, what were you going to say? I apologize. I cut you off.
No, it's fine. I was just thinking, yeah, she's like aggressively charming in this movie. It's just like a ball of sunshine. Like anything they throw at her, she's just grinning. Mm-hmm. And I think that pulls you right in.
Yeah, it's her smile is traps you. And her giggle and everything like that. She's, you know, even everything from like April Fool's Day to like Valley Girl. She really grabs you. And that's one thing with this film. And I'm with Rob. Like, this is a film that I watched a lot, even when I was younger. You know, I haven't watched it in probably a few years until this Blu-ray came out. And there's a turning point in the film. For me, so it's very standard. It's fine. It's funny. It's cute. Like I said, the underdog is there, but it's not until she picks up who basically our co-star basically is in the film, and they're like parked on the golf course, and he's drinking, and like he's just screaming at like the top of his lungs, and she's like yelling with him.
The Rockstar guy? Yeah.
Yeah, and he's just chugging down. No. This is the guy who she falls in love with.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, you know, he's just chugging down this liquor and everything, and then he's, like, yelling, and he strips down. That's when the film, like, really takes, like, another step. It gets super cute.
It took Brad a nude Sam Jones to
Once you see
him. I understand, man.
I mean, cool. Yeah, he's got a really nice chest, you know? But anyways, with that whole sequence, it's just very fun and wholesome. And, you know, they end up, you know, going back to her place, and she's trying to take care of him. The movie does have its flaws, but honestly, with stuff like this, and you know, it's like teetering on kind of the, you know, sex comedy type film, but it never fully goes there. It holds back. I don't know. It's very heartfelt and it's just cute.
She's like a relentlessly positive, optimistic person character that we get to see react with joy at other people's joy. So as she's driving people around and seeing, like, whether it be like, you know, the Penn and Teller situation, which drags on a bit too long, but
oh, man.
Elements, elements
kind of kills the movie a little bit.
It does, but elements of that. But it's but that's where I was trying to tease the sex comedy aspect of it. But the elements of it, of those scenes that work, are not when the camera is just on them, but when we're seeing her reaction to it in the rearview mirror, mm-hmm. where she's kind of like, you know, she's happy to be a part, to kind of, you know, be encouraging this person's, you know, happiness, or the Sam Jones character, or with the rock star. Again, she completes her job. She's reliable, responsible, blah, blah, blah. But she's having a good time and having fun with these people. And you see that, again, in her performance, but also her dialogue, her back and forth with people. You know, she's just got that rapid-fire, you know, screwball comedy, pattered down pat. And I think she's, again, it just, you can't help but smile as you watch every scene that she's in this movie, because she is, you know, even when the character is kind of getting, you know, dumped on, she stays strong, like Stephanie was saying. She stays positive. And she often stays smiling. She, you know, she just refuses to let this crap, you know, weigh her down.
Kills them with kindness.
Yeah. Well, but it's just very, very funny and very sweet.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a fish out of water scenario. There's like sexual politics at play, like with her coming into what would be a man's job, I guess, as a chauffeur, and her dealing with these guys.
A literal old boys club.
Yeah. Literally, like these old men who have been been chauffeurs for this company for, you know, decades, decades upon decades, and just that interaction with, but I guess played for laughs in a sense, and they can only really work because of her overwhelming positivity, you know, even when like any normal person would feel beaten down, but her character is so optimistic that you can only just enjoy the ride with her. You know, instead of kind of wallowing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really, you know, fun and very cute and important scene to the film. I got to be careful what I say because I don't want to give anything away. But there's a part where she sits next to a certain character in the film, like on a bench, and she basically says, you know, smiling, like, what's up? Hey, like, you're going to tell me what's wrong? I'm not going to leave you alone until you do, that type of thing. And just all smiles about it. Has no problem with this guy disliking her or giving her the cold shoulder. You know, she's just, you know, she does want to make friends with everybody. She is super positive. You know, there's not even when she's like angry, she's not even like angry per se. She's just, you know, I don't know. It's just, I don't know if it's within Deborah Foreman doing that or if that's part of that character, but, I would say it's probably Deborah Foreman because that's how a lot of her movies play out. She, you know, she just, when she's on screen, she has this overwhelming sense about her where you just, like, you want to hang out. I mean, with Rob, let's hold off for a second and back up and let him put his dick in his pants.
Too late.
But
he's running around the park.
That would be total Rob right there. But, total Rob. You know, she's a total Rob. So she's a lot of fun. I think it's a really, you know, it's not, like I said, it's not perfect, but it is on that scale of being a really fun sex comedy without like all the sex and gratuitous nudity.
Yeah. And the sex in it is making love. It's like really sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would definitely watch this like as a double feature with Valley Girl. Like,
oh, absolutely.
For sure. Like, it has the same vibe. I think Valley Girl has more of an edge to it just because of the Hollywood, like more of the Hollywood punk stuff, I guess, intertwined in there. Nicolas Cage being Nicolas Cage with his amazing triangle.
Was that your Nicolas Cage impersonation?
Yeah.
I would actually double feature it with Waxwork so that you can get a sense of, even though she's not, you know, she's not in as much of Waxwork, but you get the flip side of her, which is sexy as fuck. could I say sexy? I didn't know if I could, but I think
sexy.
That
you can also say fuck.
Okay, sweet. So it's a good movie in its own merits. I love Waxwork, but I think that would be a good double feature because she doesn't get to be as funny, obviously, or as sweet, but she gets to turn on other charms.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she does.
Jeez.
So.
Sorry, Stephanie.
Why?
I don't know.
Just in general.
All three of us just, you know.
Well, I would pair it with Real Genius.
Oh, so good. The best line in that movie belongs to her.
It, exactly. You want to talk about sexy?
Well, let's talk about sexy. I'm all sexed up now.
Yeah, I can tell you really sold that delivery there.
Awesome.
I know. Now I'm imagining Brad as a phone sex operator.
Like,
let's all sit for a minute and imagine that.
Yeah, no, like
don't
deep,
talk.
Deep breath. Take a deep breath.
This is getting a little awkward.
Yeah. What, on the Screamcast? Awkward? What are you talking about? We're never awkward. We're,
yeah, this thing flows great.
Yeah. Now, what I wanted to ask you before we close down this section of the podcast, because BJ is going to round up the she's going to do round up all the smut, but I wanted to ask you guys if there's any other standouts in the more of the adult titles, because you guys mentioned A Touch of Genie. Is there any other kind of standouts in these past few months that you guys wanted to bring up?
You know, there's, I don't know if BJ watched this, and I'm kind of curious if she did. So Vinegar Syndrome released this, pretty rare title called Intrusion. As far as a lady, even dudes, like, this movie pushes limits. So with pornography, I mean, we usually have something that's at least fun or sexy. This film is none of that. It is a home invasion rape. What is the word I'm thinking about? Like, shit. I can't think of it right now. I'm blanking. But anyways, it's just, it really, like, it has this really great setup. It has this really killer soundtrack. It has this really eerie car that's, you know, going through this neighborhood, and this husband and wife are, like, getting ready to go to work. And, you know, they do a little hanky-panky before work, and it's fine. And then simulated rape is what I was trying to say. But anyways, it's either near there. It's just this guy gets in this house, and it's just another hour of just him doing these things. So it's a pretty hard watch. Like, I don't know. It caught me off guard because I wasn't expecting it. Because I was kind of really digging it at first with the soundtrack and kind of this setup. Like, it seemed, a little scary for the most part in the very beginning. And then it gets into this, like, weird, just rapey thing. And it's just, I could have done without it. Mm. Like, I'm good. So, okay. And it's like, another thing that really, like, makes it work in that sense, if you're looking at it that way. It's very gritty. It's very grimy. It's very homemade-ish. So it kind of gives it that more realism, which, you know, is another thing that's really, you know, kind of hard to watch. But anyways, it's there. You know, I guess if, you know, that stuff doesn't bother you, then, you know, this might be up somebody's alley. But for me, it was a little too much.
Okay.
But I think that's, A Touch of Genie. I forgot, dude. There's so much. So Matinee Idol is fun. I dug that. That was one of their porn on Blu-rays. So John Leslie and Kay Parker from I am drawing blanks everywhere. The incest movies that they did. I say that in a way that's where it's not gross.
You say it so, like, nonchalant. Oh, you know that incest movie.
Taboo. Yeah. The movie Taboo. So, yeah, it's fine in that one. Anytime John Leslie's on screen, he's a very charismatic person. You know, there's a couple male talent porn stars that were in the 70s and 80s that really brought a lot of joy work, and I don't know, it feels more welcoming. It's not serious. Like, it just seems a lot more fun than, you know, what we have today. Now it's like these really dark things that happen behind the scenes. With these, it seems like everybody is getting along. Everybody's having fun. You know, everywhere between Harry Reams and, you know, John Leslie, you know, Herschel Savage, all these guys are having a lot of fun behind the scenes and, you know, in front of the camera. So Matt Nagel has its moments. It's funny at times. It's sexy at times. There was that one, and I think that's all I got to. I really wanted to watch the other title that they released on DVD. I haven't watched it yet. Was the Never Sleep Alone? I haven't heard of that. The stars other than John Leslie and Joey Silvera. I think Ron Jeremy's in it too, but those guys, aside from Ron Jeremy, because he's gross, you know, they're a lot of fun on screen. So,
all right, well, BJ will join us in a little bit to run down those titles. Their September package is up for pre-order right now for $88. You can get spend $88, you get 5 discs. You get Psychos in Love, Ed Wood's Orgy of the Dead, Trip with the Teacher, Dark Dreams, and then the latest Peekarama, which I believe is 3 titles. So you can go to vinegarsyndrome.com right now and grab that for the discounted price over there. You can,
I'll give a quick shout out too to another. Not necessarily a recent one, but that Dixie Ray Hollywood star. Is one of my a little while ago, so it's not recent, but it because it manages to have like a fully functioning plot and story involving, like, you know, a mystery and a killer and stuff like that, while also having all kinds of penetration, and I appreciate that.
You know, that is it's a rare thing that we get even back in the day. So I find when it has plots and fun plots, the movie takes it puts it on a different level, and I always dig those. That's why I always pimp Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls, because I think that's one of the most perfect, you know, comedies as well as just having pornography in it. It's just all around just a really fun flick.
Awesome. Then I need to mention their October releases are up for pre-order as well for $99. Demon Wind, Bloodbeat, and The Corpse Grinders will all have limited edition slipcovers. Demon Wind is lenticular.
You hate slipcovers, though.
Yeah, I like Vinegar Syndrome, though.
He likes Vinegar Syndrome's because he's, you know, a fanboy fuckboy, so...
No, they're
I can't
sturdy.
Imagine not liking the Demon Wind one.
Oh, man. If there's artistic value and artistic merit in the slipcover, I'm down. Also, Primeval / Lurkers on a Blu-ray DVD combo, and then A Woman's Torment on combo.
You know, it was... you know, Demon Wind's VHS original cover was lenticular and awesome. Did that, so... You know... That's a big deal.
Yeah. Yep. No, there are certain companies who do slipcovers right. I gave Screen Factory a lot of shit because they're alternative. They were like, do the alternate art on the slipcover. And for a while, like, their alternative art was like just awful compared to the movie poster. So I'd always flip it around to the movie poster anyway. And I didn't like the art on the slipcover. So I just sold it.
I just automatically, with any movie I have that has a slipcover and then alternate art on the actual sleeve, I automatically flip them anyways, just so that when I, you know, pull it out of the sleeve, it's a different cover and a different experience, and I get to have a little bit of joy in my life.
Same here. It's like a ritual.
Yep.
Except for Ronin. Ronin's the only cover I won't flip because that artwork that they had commissioned is just absolutely stunning.
Pretty badass.
Yeah, but I'll flip that one because the new artwork is on the sleeve.
I want to see it twice.
Fight about slipcover.
All right. Bring it to the ring at Fantastic Fest.
BJ's going to join us in just a little bit, so we will jump to that in a little bit. But for now, we need to say goodbye to everyone else. Rob Hunter, where can people find you on the internet? I can't even talk anymore.
I was going to say something. But anyways, Film School Rejects is where I write most of my stuff. I'm also at Slash Film and Crooked Marquee, and upcoming with my ranked list of all 72 Stephen King movies at Thrillist. And then on Twitter at Fake Rob Hunter.
Very nice. Stephanie, where can people find you?
You can always find me on Twitter at Scrawfish.
And we don't care about Brad.
Thanks for making me follow Rob.
He doesn't.
That's great.
Brad doesn't like giving his Twitter handle at all, so he hates everyone.
No, I gotta be good.
All right, BJ will join us in a little bit, and I'll talk to you. I'll talk to you through later.
Okay.
That's I'll do all
where can we find Brad?
Yeah, where are you guys?
Brad doesn't like Brad. Oh, I me. Yeah. See, Brad never likes giving out. He hates the rundown of where can we find you on the internet. He hates that. So I just
why don't you just record it once as a tag and then just add it into the end of every episode.
Well, what I say is go to thescreamcast.com, click on our social media.
No one's ever suggested that before. That's crazy.
I know. Whatever. Because pre-recorded stuff isn't as, you know, like, this is real. This is real.
Too real.
Shitty, but it's real.
Look, I just want to say thank you again, you guys, for having me on. It was a great time. I enjoyed chatting movies, and you guys are good people. So thank you again for having me on your show.
You're welcome.
Your well-oiled machine of a show.
Yeah. You're welcome back anytime, and I promise we'll do better next time.
Oh, no.
I wouldn't make
What are we talking about?
Porn.
Oh, yeah. That's it. Let's do it. Come on. Pull that hair. Get a thumb in there. Get a thumb in there. Get a thumb in there. I'm there. I'm there. Don't stop. Don't stop. Don't stop. Finish.
Well, now it's time for The Back Room. And BJ Colangelo joins us, and Brad's still here.
Hi. Oh,
Brad did not leave. BJ, what's up?
Oh, you know, you couldn't have a podcast and talk about the fuck films without having me join the party.
No, we had to make sure that worked out for sure.
I like calling them fuck films. That's what I'm going to call them now.
Except for one of the movies that we're going to cover today, like, we shouldn't call it that.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
I talked about it briefly. I was curious if you watched it or not.
I did watch it. I have some feelings.
All right, cool. We'll talk about it.
All right. Well, here we go. So now we are covering the Vinegar Syndrome. The term that we're going to use is fuck films. How's that? Is that good? Should I talk about it like
you
that?
You don't have to be so nervous about it.
I know. No, well, you didn't watch any of it, so you could just be like, this is where I tap out.
This is where I get all like I get even more like out of breath than earlier in the podcast.
It's when your pants start fitting a little tighter.
Yeah.
Aw,
so
that's cute.
Little heads up about vinegarsyndrome.com. They've removed their credit card option on the website. By the way, not sure how long that's going on. Could be through September. They're switching payment processors. So right now you can use PayPal or Pay Later. So they have a big old banner up on the website. So just FYI, it sounds like nothing's – if you did pre-orders, you're fine. So anyway, a little heads up about that. All right, you guys. BJ, I'm going to turn this over to you. So we have 11 sets to talk about.
There's so many.
Sex.
I think we should probably start with the one that most people are probably interested in, which is Throat. 12 Years After, directed by Gerard Damiano. The important thing, and it's right on the front, is that this is a reflection, not a sequel. So if you're expecting Deep Throat 2, Electric Boogaloo, you're not going to get that. So Throat 12 Years After is, I don't want to say that it's disappointing because two of the three vignettes I really enjoy, and I think that they're very well done. But when you have the name connection with Deep Throat, like, you're kind of fucking yourself before you even begin, because there's just no way that you're going to meet that. It's just impossible. But it is three sort of different vignettes that are loosely related to one another. It feels very thrown together of, like, how can we make these all make sense together? And like I said, two of the three are pretty solid. The absolutely incomparable Sharon Mitchell is, like, in one of her best performances, in my opinion. I think she's fucking great in this. And I'm a huge Sharon Mitchell fan. For those who don't know, she's, like, a massive sexologist, and she even founded, like, the American Institute of Health for Porn Stars. So she's, like, she's one of the major forces behind kind of keeping sex workers healthy and responsible. So big ups to Sharon Mitchell. That's really my only thoughts on, is that two of the three are great. Sharon Mitchell's awesome. It's not as good as Deep Throat, but it's pretty well made. The stories don't really relate to one another very well. I mean, they kind of do, but if you're looking for a really solid story that you usually get with some of these, restored sex films that Vinegar Syndrome puts out, this isn't quite up to snuff compared to some of the others.
Mm.
What do you think, Brad?
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, the stories are just there. But as far as like a well-made film, I think it's very well made. The editing, it's shot nicely. The music's great. But other than that, it doesn't really have much going for it. But I don't think it's supposed to. Like, it's not one of those things where it makes or breaks the movie. It's just that, you know, it's your regular, normal story, but it's just a really well-made porno film.
I do agree with that. I think the lighting is really interesting in some of these scenes, and the use of color and in the scenery is really nice to look at.
Yeah, and I think that was the biggest part of me, because, you know, watching these films, I mean, a lot of them run together, because, of course, they were, you know, in abundance were made at many different times by the same people. They just, you know, dished them out as quickly as they could.
Right.
You know, so when you come across something that is, when you come across something that's, you know, well made and does stand out as far as maybe a story, or it's funny, or decent acting, you know, you can really focus on those things. And that's kind of like with this one, kind of along with Corruption, you know, Corruption's really, really well made. So it's on like par with that for me. Like, the storyline's really goofy and doesn't really work, but as far as what you're seeing, especially with, you know, a transfer like this, and that's, I think, one of the reasons why it's on Blu-ray too, is just because it does look really, really good.
Yeah, it looks fucking fantastic. But I don't know. I feel like that's kind of what I always say about Vinegar Syndrome's restorations, is that even if I, you know, I'm not 100% sold on what I'm actually watching, I'm like, God, it looks good.
But it's also really cool. Like, you know, like, if we've said 1,000 times, it's, they take the time on something that not a lot of people are going to like, you know,
right?
Or, you know, something that's just so goofy, but they give it, you know, the proper treatment and, you know, get it out there. So, because no one else is going to, mainly, because they're the only ones willing to take the risk and release something that is going to have a small audience.
Right. I mean, it's one of the reasons I respect that company so much, is because they do treat fuck films or sex films or flesh flicks, whatever you want to call it, they do treat it with the same amount of respect as they would a restoration of, you know, some forgotten horror movie that dudes are jizzing their pants over because they only remember it from a VHS swap. So, I mean, good on them. It looks nice, but if you want Deep Throat, just watch Deep Throat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really all I got on that one. I think that, let's just jump into the one that is probably the least like anything else in this bundle.
Yeah.
which is going to be Intrusion. Intrusion is directed by Arthur Nouveau. It has Kim Pope in quite possibly like the most just gut-punching performance since Camille Keaton in I Spit in Your Grave. This is a fuck film that is not meant to be titillating. You may call it exploitation if you would like. I don't call it exploitation. This is another one of those instances where I fall in like the weird realm of I kind of respect this movie for showing the brutality of really, really not so fun sexual assault performances, but it goes there. It very much goes there. This is very, very hard to watch. If you are not into seeing sexual violence on screen, don't watch this. It's not for you. But it is a really ballsy film. All of the performers in it are not half-assing it. They're really kind of going for it, which makes it all the more horrific to see. But I think that this is, you know, this is another one of those like important ones where I don't know, for me personally watching it, I never felt like they were trying to be titillating. I think they were, it was very much gross. But that's on my opinion. I could have also seen it in a totally different way. What about you, Brad?
I spoke about it briefly earlier on the show, but to kind of rehash, because you know, I think you and I are on the same page. Like, it's not meant to be that, you know, jerk off porno. Like, it's meant to be kind of this, like, it feels like it's meant to be this horrifying, you know, there's a sense of realism to it. And the thing is, I for me, it pulled me in at first because I didn't know anything about the film. Mm-hmm. Like the setup, like with, you know, the husband and wife getting ready, you know, having breakfast, you know, having some naughty naughty on the table. And then like that car's there and that kick ass like synthesizer score comes in that's really like dreadful. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just like it feels like the serial killer is just like, you know, going through the streets and it pulls you in. And then once he gets there, it's just like the movie takes another turn. Mm-hmm. And it just becomes really horrifying. And like, I couldn't get into it at all. Like, I wanted it to end. And I think that's maybe what they were going for.
So yeah, I think.
So what's the point then?
It's a rape.
That's what I'm wondering.
It's like a snuff rape movie.
Yeah, it's very much like a very brutal, like, it's a home invasion movie. It's a an invasion with an assault in it. But what they do that I think is so interesting is that most films like this, the only exploration in sexuality you see is the assault. And then that falls into kind of like, oh, this is like a rape revenge or this is like a whatever you want to call it movie. Whereas this, because it shows other sides of the sexuality, it then falls under like a sex film. Because I did some Googling around. I was like, how the fuck have I never seen this up until this point? Because that's usually, like, what I know the most about is rape revenge. I hadn't seen this. And I think it's because, like you said, like, the breakfast, like, sexy, sexy time, like, because it does that, then all of a sudden it's no longer, like, an exploitation film or a rape film or whatever. It becomes, like, a sex film. And that's so weird to me that, like, that's where the distinction lies. So yeah, this is one that like, I don't want to say like it bait and switches you because it's not like it's more calculated than that. But when it gets bad, it gets, whoa, it's rough. And not bad in the sense of like poorly made. Like I think that it's a pretty well made movie, but it's hard to watch. It's miserable to watch.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, so be prepared and be aware of that because I don't want you to be like, I'm getting all the boner jams from Vinegar Syndrome and then like it ruins your whole fucking day. So
right. Don't be prepared. You want to have some sexy time with your partner. Don't
put on Intrusion. This one in. Right?
I mean, that's not that it was sexy time with a partner, but that's what happened with me. Like I sit down like, you know, I didn't have to work that day and everybody was gone. And I was like, all right, I'll put on a porno because that's usually when I watch it when everybody's out of the house. So like I put it on and like I'm into it, right? Because like it starts off really, really good, and I was like, oh shit, this is gonna be really intense, and it's a porno. Like, man, this is gonna be really cool. And then like the invasion starts, and I was like, oh no.
I mean, and I think that's why I'm so, like, I'm really glad that Vinegar Syndrome put this out, because I have never seen a film where it's like, hey, here's when sexuality is fun and awesome, and here's when it's awful. It's like, wow, like, no one ever does that. It's always one or the other. It's either porn or it's, like, a rape revenge, like, or exploitation. It's never both. So, yeah, this is fascinating to me, but yeah, I mean, I would recommend it if you can handle this kind of material. I would say check it out, because it's completely unlike anything I've ever seen. But if this is not your bag, don't watch it. It'll just ruin your day. So yeah, that's right. Intrusion, y'all. So we could do one of the double features. Let's do Sunny and More Than Sisters. Brad, I know you saw Sunny, so I'll let you talk about that one first, and then I'll jump on More Than Sisters.
Wait, which one are we talking about?
Sunny.
I gotta pull it up, because I, like I said, some of these run together.
Yeah, right, it's so one of the double feature packs.
I can't remember that one. Is this about the prostitute?
Yeah.
Okay. yeah, like, that's funny how you can, like, totally pin it out when there's probably a billion of these with prostitutes. it's fine. I mean, it's serviceable. The acting isn't too bad. It's got a really bland story, though. Like, it feels like it wants, like, it's an X-rated, romance novel.
Yes.
You know?
Because like, it has to deal with, like, greed and, like, a overbearing mother, like, worried about her son, and like that's very romance novel-y.
Yeah, and that's I just feel that we get the X-rated, you know, the butts and the tushies, and that's the same thing, but you know, the P and the V. But I mean that's what I'm saying, like it's just a little mediocre, but it really feels like a romance novel, like based on, you know, works by Carol Lee Andrews. And that's just a name I just made up, because they always have those three names on those romance novels. But that's what it just feels like. I mean, I don't know if there's anything too special about it, but yeah, I mean, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. This is very much kind of like your run-of-the-mill, like, sex film. It, like, there's really nothing to write home about it. If this is, like, a casual viewing. This isn't, like, special date night. This is fast food. This is fast food porn. So yeah, it's not bad, but it's fine.
Yeah, I think I should have watched More Than Sisters, probably.
Yeah, so both of these films are directed by Sean Costello, so that's why they're together. More Than Sisters is a hell of a, I don't want to call it false advertising, because that's selling it short. This is a lot weirder and a lot darker than I thought it was going to be. More Than Sisters just seems like the director watched Brian De Palma's Sisters, and then decided to make something like a sex film in a psychiatric hospital. The filmmaking style is a million percent ripped off of De Palma, which is super weird to see, like, a sex film with De Palma influences. There is, like, an orgy scene, but it's not erotic at all, because it's in a psych ward, and there's a lot of really weird... Everything in it is just framed really weird, so you're just uncomfortable the whole time. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I kind of have a boner, but I don't think I'm supposed to have a boner. It's not like Intrusion where it's like, this is brutal. It's just weird. So it's just very confusing to watch, because I'm not sure how I'm supposed to feel about it. I mean, the performances in it are fine. Like, they're nothing crazy. Jamie Gillis is in it, and, you know, they're in a lot of a lot of the films we've seen.
He's always great, though.
Yeah, but also Robert Kerman is in it, who is in Cannibal Holocaust. And he plays one of, like, a sadistic doctor, and, like, that's also kind of weird. I would say the transfer on this is not great. There's a couple of moments that have kind of, like, print damage. It's not super jarring, but it is there, so they obviously did the best that they possibly could.
Kind of like Intrusion.
Yeah. Like, it's not
that,
like...
That movie, that prince beat the shit.
It's not like how in, oh god, what is that? The Undertaker. It's not like The Undertaker where it like just straight up jumps into something that looks nothing like anything else. Like, but if you're paying attention, you'll notice it. But yeah, it's a weird, weird De Palma-esque psychiatric, sadistic sex film where the sex isn't erotic, but it's still like kind of titillating. So if you want to confuse your boner, like this is one to watch. But
my boners are always confused.
But of the two, I would recommend Sunny. Sunny is your more standard porno fare. More Than Sisters is the one that's a little bit more adventurous as far as tackling the structure of a sex film. So all in all, it's a pretty solid double feature because they're both by the same person, but they're wildly different. So,
you know, I'll have to watch that just because of the whole De Palma aspect. But
and if I'm remembering correctly, I'm pretty sure that the music samples like some Hitchcock films too. Like, I want to say there's like Vertigo or some shit in it. I'd have to look that up, which I didn't do because I'm a bad podcast host. But I'm pretty sure that they sample some Hitchcock sound in it, which even further is weird in De Palma, since De Palma is basically just like one giant love letter to Hitchcock, whether you want to admit that or not. That's what he is. So having De Palma's filmmaking style and Hitchcock's music plus sex, it's real weird.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, so yeah, that's that double feature. One of the other Blu-rays that they put out is Matinee Idol, which is a romantic comedy sex film, sort of. I don't know how to describe it. I had a lot of fun with it. It's super bananas. I've watched so much porn in the last like 4 days. My brain is turning to mush.
I talked about this a little bit. It was because, you know, I like, for me, I like to have you know, well made porno films or something with a good cast, and that's one thing that I focused on this one with, you know, with Kay Parker's in it, John Leslie, you know, Herschel Savage. Like, the movie's fun to me. Like, it's got a decent cast, and this is one of these porno films that reminds me of, like, because, you know, what I mentioned before is that most of the time, especially now, we have all these dark tales of what happens in the porno industry, and, you know, most of them are true. It just seems that, like, at this time, especially with this film being made, this is a time where it was fun, you know, where everybody was having a good time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, on set and off set. Like, there wasn't all this other bullshit. And I think that kind of, you know, emulates on the screen, and when you're sitting in your living room watching this, like, to me, Matinee Idol's fun. Whether it's, you know, you're looking at the storyline or nothing, it's goofy, but it's just a fun time, and that's kind of how I look at it.
And this is one, too, that you can tell every single person involved in this was dedicated to making this movie. The easiest way that I can tell if people don't want to be there is by the costuming. And the costuming in this movie is very, it feels very deliberate. It feels like the outfits were picked for the scenes, for the scenario. They didn't just throw something on them and said, hey, it's a fuck film, who cares? Like, the colors are so vibrant in all of the outfits the women wear. And that to me is just like, that's the sign that like everyone here is really excited to be working on what they're doing. Kay Parker is, you know, great always. But yeah, I mean, this is one of the more lighthearted sort of fun skin flicks, but it's nothing crazy special in my opinion. I mean, I had fun with it, but this is one that I probably won't revisit, but I'm not upset that I watched it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really about it.
I dig it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. I mean, I recommend it. So there's that. What should we go to next? Because I feel like there's a bunch of packs. Yeah, there's...
Yeah, there's like three more packs. And then one more Blu-ray.
Okay. So one of the packs is Afternoon Delights and Slave of Pleasure, which is one of the Picaramas. Oh, God, I have to remember which one is which at this point. See, this is what happens when you just watch all of them. They do kind of blend together.
I couldn't imagine.
Yeah. Especially so the Picaramas. So. The Picaramas, like, Jesus.
Well, I think Afternoon Delights is the one I saw. That's the one with the poker night with...
yeah, talking about sexual indiscretions.
Yeah, with the couples and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Which is another, has rape in it.
Yep, sure does.
Wow.
You know, but, it's one of those where, like, they try, like, it feels that they're, you know, it's funny because these are directed by the, Sean Costello guy that we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So with this one, and I guess this makes sense, like, he's just all over the place. But with this one, it feels like they're trying too hard to try to intertwine these stories, but I mean, really is just, it's a anthology of sex.
Yeah,
you know?
It really is.
And that's what it is, and they try to like spin it all together. It's like the VHS of pornos,
mm-hmm.
The VHS series, where it's like, how do we tie these together? Ah! Just do some.
Except this anthology has Vanessa Del Rio, and...
She's a cutie, man.
Vanessa Del Rio rules. She goes to, her whole scene was my favorite, because it's like this, the most Dear Penthouse or like Penthouse Forum scenario ever. So Vanessa Del Rio, she goes in, her like story is that she goes into a porno theater, like a triplex theater, dressed like a man. As if it's like fucking Shakespearean time and she's not allowed to be there for whatever reason. And she gets like super aroused watching the movie and then starts banging all the dudes in the theater, which is like never going to happen in a million years, but it's a really good scene. And it was my favorite one. It was easily my favorite one. So yeah, there's that.
Yeah, and I didn't watch this Slave of Pleasure though. So
okay, Slave of Pleasure. I'm gonna give you a one line description, and I feel like Sean Costello is like that kid who went to film school and then decided that all of his influences, he wanted to like make a film in homage to all of them, but he did that with pornography. So, Slave of Pleasure, the mistress of a man who she is having an affair with makes a deal with white slave traders to kidnap his wife.
All right.
So, it's like Taken 2, but with porn. It's very much trying to be like a sexy detective movie, but with white slave rings. This is very much like More Than Sisters, where it should not be a sex movie. Like, it is Taken 2. That's what it is. It's Taken 2 with sex. Like, I don't know how else to pitch this, but there's like not as, like, there's no fighting in the way that like you get with Liam Neeson and Taken 2. But it's just, it doesn't make any fucking sense.
Instead
like, there's.
Instead of punching throats. They're deep throating.
I hate you so much. The sex scenes are okay. There's actually a pretty awesome S&M scene in it. But it's weird because, like, the sexual politics in it are a little uncomfortable because, I mean, they're white slave traders, so they're, like, taking people and turning them into nymphomaniacs, which is what really happens to people that are trafficked. So, yeah, it's weird to watch this and think, like, they were trying to be titillating, but it's definitely about human trafficking. And that's not sexy. That's, I guess back then it might have been a little bit more acceptable, but given that, like, trafficking is a huge problem now, like, I morally can't turn that switch in my brain. And I know that that's on me. So if you can, you know, kind of separate the reality from the art, the sex scenes are really, really good. But I'm one of those weirdos who invests too much into the story of porn. So the fact that it's trafficked women or white slave trade women, it bothers me a little bit. There's that, but it is a pretty solid lineup between the two. I think I would recommend this one more than I would Sunny and More Than Sisters. I think these both just have a higher quality as far as sex is concerned, and that's what this whole segment is for. So these overall, I think, are better films than the other two.
No, I'll have to watch. I mean, this Sean Casello guy is, he has some, maybe some depth. Even though his movies might not be great, at least he's not making the same movie over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, I don't know why I said I mean. I didn't need to say that. But, no, you're absolutely right. Like, his films, like, somebody like Bob Chin, I would say, is like an auteur of what he did.
Yeah, he's very different. He never makes the same film twice, that type of thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of cool. I was not very familiar with this guy's work before. So, kudos to you, Vinegar Syndrome, as per usual. Let's see. There is a triple pack from them of a director named Ralph Eli, or Ralph L. And he did My Master, My Love, Teenage Masseuse, and one that's just called More. Yeah.
This is when I'm trying to remember stuff. Tell me something.
Okay, so
I'm trying to remember.
My Master, My Love has a dude in a turtleneck, and there's a house sitter.
I don't think I saw that one.
Okay, so this one, I'm gonna be completely honest. I fast forwarded through most of it. I was very porned out at this point, so this entire triple feature, I'm not going to be the best at reviewing it because I didn't watch all of them. I just went through it. There are 11 discs, guys. There's so much porn, and, like, there's so many hours in a day. But yeah, this one has Darby Lloyd Raines in it, who, I'm trying to think what else she was in that would have been in Vinegar Syndrome. She's in Both Ways.
Oh, yeah. I like Both Ways. That's a unique movie.
Yeah. So, I know we've talked about that one before. But, she's in it. That's really all I can tell you. Because I didn't really watch that one. Teenage Masseuse, is super weird. It's not a teenager. It's a college student.
That's probably
luckily
a good thing.
Hey, yeah. She could be 18.
That's true. So in this one, it has Bobby Astier. Bobby Astier is in a lot of movies around this time. And he usually plays kind of like dorky characters. But in this one, he plays somebody who wants to be like a dom. So he has all of these like sex dreams where he's like got women tied up and like in a dungeon and he's wearing like leather man panties.
Oh, this is the one with that Annie girl. Annie Sprinkle.
Annie Sprinkle, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I saw this one.
Yeah, so Annie Sprinkle's in this one. There's like there's a lot of leather.
This is the New York one, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yes. This I can't get over leather man panties. There's like leather man panties and candles in some of these dreams, which just makes me laugh for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's geared to be a comedy.
It's
just so goofy. It just doesn't achieve anything. Like, it's just try to be goofy on screen to make us laugh rather than, I don't know, actually writing comedy. It's just like visualizing comedy, and it's not really that funny. I don't know.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm not upset. This is another one. I'm not upset that I watched it, but there's... Eh. I mean, it's kind of there. And then the last one is More, which is super fucking weird. This one, I kind of, like, again, I sped through a lot of these. But it's real weird. Brie Anthony is in it. Brie Anthony has a horrendous French accent for God knows what reason. She's been featured before. I don't know if she's in Reunion. I can't remember. She's in something else that Vinegar Syndrome's done before. But yeah, she has like this awful wig and a bad French accent, and it's this one. The humor in it is very juvenile, but it never feels justified. So to combine that with a actual hardcore sex acts just makes it kind of an uncomfortable watch and a very confusing one, because it never feels like slapsticky and fun. It just feels very immature and then having sex, which
like the detective one with Harry Reams,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm with you on this. I think maybe this whole set's just weird.
I don't know if this was just like a guy who was trying to make comedic porn but doesn't know how to be funny, but that's kind of what it feels
like. He's like investigating a missing person or something, or it's a murder or something. And it just never achieves anything. And the thing I think that hurts most is that if I remember correctly, both of these movies are like extremely short.
Yeah, they're both barely over an hour.
So, like, I just don't know if he just didn't have the material or he just couldn't translate what he wanted the actors to do. And he was just like, all right, just end up, just fuck, you know? Like, we can't do this. Just fuck. Cut the budget. You know, I'll make another movie. That's kind of how it felt. Like, they feel really rushed. And, you know, everything's too short, even the sex scenes.
Well, and I feel like these films would have benefited from being shorts. Like, it feels like he didn't have enough material to make it into a feature, but then he has too much, like, bullshit that you don't need stretching it out. Like, had he just done these as, like, scenes and maybe done, like, an anthology of, like, New York scenes or whatever, like, that, I think that would have been better. But instead, it's, like, three barely over an hour films that have a lot of unnecessary shit that you don't need. And then because of that, the sex scenes kind of suffer because you have to have some sort of through line to connect them all together. And it doesn't feel like they really had that. Of all of the compilations, this one is my least favorite because clearly I didn't really even watch it. I just kind of sped through and looked at the sex and went, nope.
So we got the last
it's not
part
that
of the
great.
Package. The last package here. I'm not sure what months these are, but it's all right. You guys will find them. So we got three more here. Out of these last three, which is the best one, the one worth talking about the most? Touch of Genie, Never Sleep Alone, and then Pleasure Maze / Lover's Lane.
Well, for me, a touch of Gene, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I will say I do like Never Sleep Alone. I don't hate it. Again, Sharon Mitchell, big fan. Joanna Storm in it as well, big fan. But Touch of Genie is that's the best one of that group. And because it has a fucking what's his nuts in it, that weird looking guy.
What's his nuts?
I can't remember his name. No,
no, he's the guy that's in the beginning.
Yeah. He's on he's on the cover of it. He has like a very long face.
Yeah, he's so goofy.
Yeah, he's in a bunch of stuff. I can't think of what it is.
But I don't even think they feature his name on the front cover of the movie.
I was just done. I'm
probably not.
Douglas Stone.
Oh. Thank you, Jesus. Oh my God, that was making me crazy. Because this movie I think is more.
He's in normal movies too, like
right. Yeah, that's really what I know him from.
Yeah, he's not really a pornographic actor.
No, because that's the thing is that Touch of Genie is more to me. This is the slapsticky kind of slapsticky kind of like porno that I wanted the previous triple feature to be. This was way more fun.
It's got some hilarious fucking dialogue.
Yeah, it's super clever. There's some physical comedy in it, but it's physical comedy that works. And I think that if you can get physical comedy to work in pornography, that's always a good sign because pornography is nothing but physicality. Yeah, this one's really fun. I think this one, I don't know how. Or, I should have looked up who color corrected this, but the color correction on this is fucking awesome. It is beautiful to look at. The one chick's eyeshadow, fucking flies off of the screen. What is her name? I'm so bad at names, guys. This is terrible.
You're like me sometimes. That's what happens.
Yeah,
it takes a few minutes to register
I'll probably game. Scream it at 3 in the morning. We'll have long since been done recording. I'll just scream some random ass name.
I know that Tina Russell is in it, and
Lynn Stevens is in it.
The one that I thought was hilarious, the name was the mom. Her stage name is Ultramax. And I when I saw it on screen, I was like, wait, is that a dude? And then I looked it up and it's a girl. And I was like, what? And she's the one that was like, never save that milk for me.
Ultramax. Oh,
it's so good.
Yeah, I do like this one. And this one is, this one's a little bit shorter too, but it doesn't feel very short. I don't know. It feels like a solid film, but no, yeah. I like this one. I think this one's super fun. Mark Stevens is also in it. This is one of the stronger releases that they did, and that's probably why it's on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I think there's something in it for everybody. And like I said, also being a Joe Sarno movie,
the sex is good in it.
Yeah, it has.
It's real good.
It has a lot of, good qualities.
Yeah, it's fun. This is a fun one. This is the one that you can watch with your partner and have a good time with. So, I recommend it, and I want to find out who color corrected it, because the color correction on this, I can't stress it enough. It's so good, and I don't know why I care about that, because that's the stupidest thing to care about in a porno. But I like it, damn it, I like it.
They treat a lot of these restorations like you guys have said, just like any other. You know, they're not like, well, this is just a sex film. Like, they treat every restoration like a good restoration. They don't. They do the best they can on everything. That's why I like Vinegar Syndrome so much,
Yeah. And I do like that the character design for the genie is just as much teal eyeshadow as possible. That's how you signal that somebody is magic and otherworldly, just teal eyeshadow.
So what's Never Sleep Alone about? Is that anything interesting in that one?
I took all my notes down because I didn't think we were going to talk about it.
This is the one with it's got a great cast. It has I say that, and so like the same actors and everything.
Yeah, it's all the same.
So I mean, it has the normal people. This one has Ron Jeremy, which is gross.
but it has Silvera in it.
Joey Silvera, which I mean, the thing is like you watch Joey Silvera then. And then, like, you figured out what he started doing, like, later on, and then you're like, oh, I didn't know that. Because, you know, like, he went through that, like, trans phase, like, he just made a bunch of trans porn. I was like, wait a second, Joey Silvera, I didn't know you liked that dick, too. So, he liked that dick. John Leslie, but yeah, Sharon Mitchell's in this one, too. This is the one I was actually looking forward to.
It's basically like it's an open marriage and it's this married couple and their extracurricular activities. Like that's the best way to describe it.
And I was like super pumped about it because it like I don't know from the front cover like I was I was expecting more. The sex is okay. It's just Ron Jeremy's in it.
Yeah, he's gross.
Yeah.
Like, it's skinny Ron Jeremy, too, and guess what? Still gross. I don't understand how he was ever as popular as he is, because he's disgusting.
He's the everyman.
I don't care how big your dick is. Like, you're disgusting.
No, he's not the everyman.
That's what I'm guessing.
Not even close.
Right on. All right, we need to start wrapping up, but anything as far as this Peak-O-Rama goes, Lover's Lane and Pleasure Maze... Anything? Is it, can we say standard Peek-O-Rama, kind of just throw it in, have some fun with it, or?
Well, that's the only one that I didn't see, but I know one of them, they're like a robot. Oh. So I'm excited to see it. Because and it's obviously like low budget porn robots, so you're not getting like Ex Machina or anything. You're getting just like a girl who's standing with stiff arm, and I want to see that shit.
Yeah, that's the one I should have watched. I watched the Lover's Lane instead, and it's just another like anthology thing where this is the one I got confused with the other one with the husbands and wife. But yeah, this one is basically a bunch of girls just talk about their best sexual experiences up like on Lover's Lane.
Okay.
Right.
So the sex is okay, and the girls are a lot of fun because they're giggly and cute, you know, and they're talking like girls do about dicks and stuff. So, what I think that girls talk like when they talk about dicks and stuff. I should have watched fucking Pleasure Maze because I didn't watch it and I saw this thing about they're called night droids.
Yeah.
Jesus
night
Christ.
Droids.
I need to read the descriptions of these things before I watch them.
You do.
This is what we run into where it's, we're judging a book by its cover.
Hey, sometimes that's the best way with porno. Yep.
But sometimes it's horrifically misleading.
That's awesome. All right. Well, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the back room, everybody.
That's the back room.
Welcome to
As I said earlier, before the back room, you can get the October package and the September package still over on vinegarsyndrome.com. A lot of good titles on there. So please check them out. I also want to thank our sponsors. Head over to thescreamcast.com/sponsors and check all them out. Most notably, Grindhouse Video.
Make
sure you check with them. I just got a couple movies from Grindhouse Video. I just got The Slayer and Ronin. So, came in the mail today.
Best things
and my
ever.
Daughter opened up the package, and I let her know she's not allowed to touch my mail at all, because I want the satisfaction of opening up my Grindhouse Video mail.
What's also sweet is that Grindhouse Video is the exclusive retailer of the filmography of Dustin Mills, who I've talked about on here for people who like shoestring budget horror films or weird puppet horror movies, where maybe I may or may not be a voice of one of those puppets. But Grindhouse Video is the only place you can get physical copies of it.
Very nice. Also,
just fucking
Coffee
rad.
Shop of Horrors. Check them out at coffeeshopofhorrors.com. Use the code SCREAMCAST to get 10% off your order. And then music by Wolfman of Mars and art by Ink Splatters. Also want to give a shout out to Maintain, M-A-I-N-T-A-I-N-N, for keeping our website and our store locked down and safe from fucking asshole spammers and shit and hackers.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's Screamcast, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
See you guys. Thanks for the porno.
Okay, bye.
See ya.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. But it's just begun.
Has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to oneofus.net and don't forget your towel.